866-901-ADAM, 866-901-ADAM. We're feeling vulnerable. We will listen to you. We will talk to you. Wide open phone lines. Good morning, Teresa Strasser.
Good morning, Adam Carolla.
Good morning, Danny Bonaducci.
Good morning, Adam Carolla.
All right, so let's see. Everyone was last seen Thursday night over at the Key Club. A successful bachelor party for Danny Bonaducci. Good times.
Very least.
Yeah, it was a good. It was good times over there.
We had a great crowd, and they all stayed the entire 4 hours.
I know. I felt bad for
them. Me too.
Actually, if such a thing is possible, the bachelor party got better.
It got better because then you got into a limousine and you went to San Diego.
Yeah.
Immediately after the bachelor party.
Not immediately. It took me a minute to... God, I can't believe I was in this position.
Compose yourself?
No, to choose companions.
Oh.
Ah. So is it Bull Bryan or is it Mike Chaffee who goes with you?
I think I saw you on the corner getting into a limo and it was kind of a Sophie's Choice moment. Mm-hmm. There was a bunch of girls on the corner and room for only one or two.
Oh, that's a good name for your penis. Sophie. Got to make a choice.
Exactly.
Right hand or left hand?
So I really did. I mean, and they're really nice. I mean, a couple of the girls from Spearmint Rhino were, you know, like flirtatious and blah, blah, blah. But these were real girls who had heard me say this would be fun and everything, but I want to get back in love and all that, blah, 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 blah.
Now, these girls were at the bachelor party.
Yeah, but they had, like, most of them, there was that group that you saw, and one or two of them were nasty, but that kind of gave them an extra edge, if you will.
Yeah, you like nasty.
Well, I couldn't tell for sure if I took one of these girls that seemed really nice. I was going down to my fight, and if I lost, I was going to be flipped out, and if I won, I was going to be champion of the world, and I didn't want to have to, like, also try and make my moves. I wanted kind of a guarantee, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I went with nice girl.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And worked
just
my,
nice girl.
Worked my mojo.
Now was nice.
I really like nice girl.
She's not the same
anymore. Hold on. Is nice girl the school teacher?
No, there's an entirely... Well, you know what? I think it would be best if I end up telling what happened that we don't identify this poor young lady in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
Nice girl.
So we're not talking about school teacher.
We're talking about a very nice young lady who came out to see us because we asked her to.
Mm-hmm.
And she said very kind things about my friends, which was really smart, I thought.
Did we see her there at the Key Club?
You may have taken notice of her. She's just a girl in the crowd.
Okay, but we didn't...
I took notice of her. I saw her before I spoke to her.
We didn't get her up on stage or do anything like that with her. All right, so it's off to San Diego you go. Good times in the limo on the ride over?
Good, but, you know, I had stripper all over me.
Yeah, from the lap dances.
I mean, and I had just done, by the way, I had seen it on YouTube.
Yeah, by the way, if you go on TMZ, someone in our audience was kind enough to tape Danny in his underpants and cowboy boots getting a lap dance.
I was listening on the way in. I think when Adam refers to them as underpants, it couldn't sound more gay.
Well, they had pirates on them.
Because Danny's in his pirate underpants. They're not underpants.
It's unclear whether pirates actually wore underpants, actually.
Way,
but if they did, I feel like that's the ones
either
they would have worn.
Either way, I feel obliged to say that segment is rated R.
Yeah. Yeah, let me tell you something.
the
pros versus hoes was outstanding.
It was tremendous. By the way, Presley Rose, the girl with the pink hair.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Love her.
And the girl who won, the hoe. Yeah. And we mean that in the best possible sense.
Right.
She's not a professional.
Ho implies professional, but it just means she's not a professional
dancer. She was some kind of gymnast. She was flipping over you.
No, she wasn't. Do you know why I picked her, aside from the thing that I have a thing for Asian chicks?
Why? Mm-hmm.
She was wasted and was going to kill herself. She wasn't gyrating and flipping around. That was me. She was falling the whole time. When I heard Adam saying, when I heard Adam this morning on the way in say, and now she's above Danny's head and she's flipping around. That wasn't her.
Yeah.
That was me. She
Danny
was falling.
Throwing her around.
And I kept catching her, and I'd catch her. And I thought, well, this is, Adam was saying really kind things about me. He was saying, you know, making jokes, but I was saying, Danny's quite the physical specimen, that's to be sure, and stuff like that. And I've got this girl that has no interest in her own safety at all. And she's drunk and falling. So what I'm thinking of these wild moves are me catching her before she hits the floor and me hoisting her up over my head is saying, this chick's done falling. Well, and then she wasn't.
It looked,
she started gyrating up there.
Yeah, it looked good.
It did look great.
It looked amazing.
It was, like, literally, I'll tell you the truth, when I had her up over my head and I was holding her by her butt, and she started to lean, like, way to one side, that was so not her doing. I mean, and I thought, my elbow's going out. Mm-hmm. And I got to fight tonight.
Right.
If I have a stripper injury and can't fight, no one's going to believe I have a stripper elbow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Point.
What do I do here? And I was actually getting hurt because she was just throwing herself around. So when I was done, I picked her because I thought she made the whole thing look the most interesting. I'd have picked as the best stripper the chick with the pink hair. I loved her.
She was amazing.
Yeah, Rose. Catherine, the Eurasian chick.
Yeah.
Hot.
Well, by the way, the other hoe, non-professional, she is an inspiration to all of us because she had recently had, as she announced in the green room, she had recently had liposuction and hadn't properly healed, and yet here she was competing.
Which one was that?
The girl that was not Catherine, the regular girl hoe in a turquoise dress.
Yeah.
That chick that jumped around like that, because she's not the nastiest.
Shaking her ass a lot.
She showed a lot more flesh than anyone else.
Yeah.
She had a thong and she picked up her dress.
Inspirational.
Inspirational. Playing injured.
Huh. What? Had no idea.
She's taking a knee, if you will, or whatever.
Speaking of which, we still don't know what happened on the ride there and the fight.
Well, it is dictated, I will tell. And someone went down when I'm done. So the ride there is actually getting to know this person because it's a real live, sober human being that is just witness to that. You know, she came down to meet us and be, you know, with the gang, and then all of a sudden I'm in the pirate underwear and cowboy boots and the strippers in the air. So she was a little more. You could tell by Santa Monica Boulevard that she was rethinking this.
That's just moments away from the Key Club. And San Diego's about 2.5-3 hours away from Los Angeles. Quick question, though.
Yes, sir.
When you get into the back of the limo, partition's down, right?
Yeah.
You then have to raise the partition?
No, this guy could not have put up the partition fast enough.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No question.
I like
where's
that.
The button,
all folks that drive the limo, please, here's how it goes. Folks get in the back of the limo. You give them a little talk. My name's Jim. I'll be a driver. We're going to San Diego. Would you like to stop off for some In-N-Out burger, whatever it is? And then when you're done, say, I'm going to go ahead and raise the partition. If you guys want anything, feel free to whatever. And do it that way so you don't have to have that weird moment I've had many times where you're half hour into the ride and you establish eye contact in the rearview mirror and then you go, I'm going to raise the partition.
Right.
And then you feel like the guy thinks, all right, well, now Big Shot's getting a Hummer, or he's going to break out the nose candy. It's weird. You guys should raise it.
Right away. And leave it to us to put down and say, no,
that's right. That's right.
Now, are you with school teacher and nice girl?
No. There's only the girls in my car.
Okay.
Who I will not identify because I will see her again. And if I get to this story, she will not be very pleased that people know this about her.
There's one girl.
That's it.
In the limo. So you head to San Diego with her.
Right.
And you're having a nice ride, but it's not Sodom and Gomorrah.
No, it's actually, I'm trying to explain that that's not like my real life or anything like that. And that's not how I live. It's a show. I've never been to a strip club. Because I'm feeling now awkward because I just realized also, and I think you all left with one too, did everybody else have a full-on shopping bag of sex toys and videos with them when they left?
Oh, that thing. Yeah. Ozzy, I didn't, but Ozzy tried to... Friday, Ozzy's like, taking a liquid squirrel. I'm like, huh? Taking a squirrel. And I'm like, what? Put your butt, you know? And I'm like, Ozzy, what are you talking about? And he's got some sort of vibrating squirrel or penguin or something.
A duck.
Yeah, I had the right.
Along with other thing, I had like full on stuff. There's also this weird mitt that vibrated.
Yeah.
And so I have now been in the tiniest little, those are not like, those are girls' underwear.
Yeah.
I got them as a gag. I was out shopping with the school teacher at Victoria's Secret.
Right. Ironically, they're called boy cut shorts.
They are cut. Yeah. And we both got them. We thought it'd be cute and funny to have matching underwear. That's all. And so that's why I was wearing them. I also tanned in them on purpose so I'd have the bizarre tan lines in case that came up, which I'm sure it did, and it did.
I like to rename them boycott shorts, which is any guy that's going to rock those shorts, I'm going to boycott in the future.
Yeah. But so, you have to remember, I'm on a stage. Imagine, say, if Elvis walked around dressed like that on the street. You'd go, what a freak.
That's true.
You know, I knew I could get away with anything on that stage. I did that on purpose.
Right.
I was over bedazzled. Sure. Actually, not to be true. I would wear that outfit anywhere. I like my outfit.
Sure. All right. So you're heading to San Diego. You're in the back of the limousine. And you're in your refractory period.
Yes. And I'm also with a very nice girl who I'm attracted to just physically right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And also, not intellectual, I don't want to say that, but she really said all the right things. I just wanted to meet you. I've also been a big fan of Adam Carolla for a very long time.
Mm.
And, you know, I love the way Teresa keeps you guys on track. I mean, she, like, listens to the show. And immediately, if you're going to be, you know, I mean, I'm kind of semi-joking about the new Mrs. Bonaducci, but if you were to be Mrs. Bonaducci, you got to have an ear for radio. You got to be able to tell me when I got home what worked, what didn't work. Here's what Adam did. Here's what you did. Thank God Teresa kept you guys on track or you'd have gone anywhere. That's what this girl totally did.
Mm-hmm.
She explained, you know, oh, it came down to me. I've loved Adam for a really long time. Boy, if you two didn't have Teresa, you'd just go on tangents all day. So yeah. I'm loving her. I'm loving her. You know, because she's not making a big deal about me as much as the whole show.
By the way, she dropped 3 points in the looks department when I heard big fan of mine for a long time. I had her at a solid 8.3 before I heard
your
that.
Your fans are unattractive.
Well, I make them unattractive because of my low self-esteem. Thank you.
But not
the guys are hot.
I want to separate her as far from this story as possible because she hangs out with my kids.
So, on the way to San Diego, but the debauchery doesn't begin in the limo or it doesn't end there.
No, it's debauchery of any kind.
It's a mellow ride to San Diego.
It's mostly a ride in it's a weird thing because I know I've got a fight and I'm kind of scared. I know that the guy was 220 when we weighed in at the last press conference and was 200 at the most current weigh. So he's lost 20 pounds. So he's taking it as seriously as
he's working
have.
Hard.
Hard.
All right. And, we need to take a break. Speaking of working hard, Bonaducci was in San Diego, had his big fight over the weekend, Friday night to be exact, after the Key Club. We'll find out how the fight went, who won, who lost, who got laid, and all that good stuff.
And the bag of sex toys.
And the bag of sex toys next on the Adam Carolla Show.
It's the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Teresa Strasser, and Danny Bonaducci. Here's what's coming up this morning with program director Jack Silver.
Morning, peeps. Jack Ben's still recovering from Danny's bachelor party. Let's just say the party didn't end Thursday night at the Geek Club. Or the next day in the drunk tank. Or the next day at the free clinic. Or yesterday back at the free clinic for results from any number of tests. Well, let's just move on. Ray Ozzie and Ray review the number one comedy in America, Knocked Up. We'll count down the best and worst summer songs of all time for Music Monday. And rock band Tesla in studio. Wait, I've got all of their hit on my iPod. Wait.
Thank you, Jack. Call 866-901-ADAM. It's the Adam Carolla Show.
Mm-hmm. So when we left off, Bonaducci was in the limo. He made his way to San Diego with his new lady friend.
Really nice girl. Really nice girl. And I'm sorry if I wasn't paying attention for a second, but I could see the text on my phone saying, please don't say my name.
Mm-hmm. She's texting you right now.
Which I had promised I would not. And that's no problem at all. But when this story goes the way it's going to go, I don't want to give too much away, you will see why a very nice girl with a very nice job. This is a real live human being.
Yeah.
You know how, let's especially stick with some of the men. You know how some of the men there, you could say with a straight face, weren't real live people.
Yes.
Like one or two, you could just say, that's not a real live human being. Right? That's just a train wreck.
Right.
You know, this was not one of them. This was a real person with a real job. She was stone sober. Maybe she'd had a cocktail. I couldn't tell. But,
yeah,
you know, this is a real live person.
Look, it's sad, but it's like when you turn on the news and you find out some teenager set some hobo on fire, you go, oh, no, that's sad. And then you move on. And then when you find out that John Kennedy died in a plane crash, you're like, oh.
Right.
we pretend we don't do that as a society, but that's all we do.
Yeah,
yes, we've decided that that hobo was worth about nothing, and that, you know, oh, so good looking,
so sweet, young, so talented, and
educated. Right, we do that with people. You do it with women.
No, if there's one thing you've taught me, and actually there's certainly more than that, is all we do is judge.
That's all we do, but we keep saying we don't, or we're trying
but
not
all,
to.
All we do is
and you're
judge.
Saying we do that with women, meaning there's a continuum where Tara Reid's over here and Paula Zahn's over here.
Right. Yes, and that's why when you watch a porn movie and the chick is, you know, tatted head to toe and has piercings head to toe, and this is her 4,000th porn movie, it's like, eh. Who cares? But when, hey, this is her first, or this is what we love about the celebrity sex videos. They didn't want to do that movie.
Right.
That's, it's better. So this is not a throwaway individual.
Right. That's exactly, very, thank you very much.
She's not a skank.
There is every possibility, just because of her hello, that I would see her again. Just the way she presented herself, I just like everything about her right off the bat. She gets in the car, and I also kind of like this, although it made it uncomfortable. You could tell she was rethinking it right away.
Yeah, I like that, too.
Cold feet.
Well, she's in a limousine with... I mean, I don't think she'd noticed the bag full of sex toys, although it was in a bag that was covered with nothing but that famous picture of a girl's butt in a thong bent over. Mm-hmm. That's all little squares of that picture.
Mm-hmm.
But we kind of took no notice because the limousine was ridiculous. It was a Humvee that was probably seated 20. There was that to talk about. There was the party to talk about. I was flipped out about this upcoming fight that night. So there was a lot to talk about, but you could see the trepidation that she had made a bad choice, that she got caught up in a moment and is now in a car with a stranger.
But that's what you want.
Yes.
Like we talked about.
Exactly.
Like you want to go in. When you're going in, it's a negotiation. It's a deal. You don't want to go into a car dealership and go, I'll give you $45,000. Okay, I'll take it. You want the guy to go in and say, I talked to my sales manager. Ah,
I'm taking a beating on this.
Oh, my God. He's up in arms. Let's just do it. I don't even want to talk about it. I'm so depressed.
Right.
That's especially how you want to feel. You want to feel like you won that deal.
And especially if it looks like a $45,000 car and you say, I'll give you 10, and he says, okay.
Right.
You know, this girl could have been wearing a good disguise. People have been disguised to me and wanted things from me since I was 10 years old and would act any different way to get to it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty good at that. And this girl wasn't doing that. This was not a throwaway, as Carole puts it.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the fact that she's now going, I'm losing, going to San Diego. I'm stuck unless I drive back or get back on my own, whatever's going through her mind. But we talk it through and nothing out of the ordinary happens. And she ends up either with her asleep on my shoulder or me asleep on her shoulder, whichever way, that's how we wake up in San Diego. And nothing bad has happened except for really nice conversation. Now, I might have been overly chatty in the beginning because I'm all geared up for the show. And
DP?
I know. I'm
overly chatty.
Overly, I am geared up from the show.
I picture you fanning yourself going, fresh, when she talks. and lowering the fan every once in a while, and then twinkling your eyes a little, and bring it back up again.
So, I'm overexcited about the party. I'm nervous about the fight, so I may have chatted a little too much all about me, when you know on a first date you want to talk about her.
Right.
I don't do too much of that.
Right. So now you get to the hotel, and is there passion that night?
No. You went to the hotel. There is, again, and it wasn't because I've been around the block, man. You can tell. I can tell. I think every move in the world. I can tell a girl who's gonna, but she's only gonna go so far tonight. So you'll respect her tomorrow,
right?
You know that what's planned and what's not planned. There was romance and kissing and hugging, and I knew this was not happening right now. So I didn't push that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a fight in a few hours. I got to get some sleep.
Right.
So I go to the fight, and I don't want to tell you too much about that right now because that's a separate story that will just take a bunch of time. But it's bloody, and it's gory, and bones are broken, and there's blood everywhere, and it's horrifying that they won't stop it.
Really?
Somebody's getting killed.
Whoa.
The fight.
Yeah.
We're not talking about the sex at this point.
Because I'm looking at you, you don't have a scratch on you.
Well, you don't
a
have
minor
a
giveaway.
You don't have a scratch on you, but it's a bloodbath.
I have it with me on tape. I brought my own video camera, and my friend did very well. There's 90% of the fight. You think on a home video you'd have like 50%?
Mm-hmm.
90% of the fight is clear on this video I brought.
Can we put it on the website?
Yeah, that's why I brought it. You'll have to cut it out because neither of us are pros, and he was at 220. He looked really big, but was in bad shape. Mm-hmm. And I smoked three packs a day, so they made it 3 minute rounds. I mean, 3 1-minute rounds with 2 minutes rest.
Right.
If you chopped out all the knockdowns too, because there's a bunch of them.
Right.
This is all going to take 2.5 minutes tops for the whole thing.
Right.
It was, by the way, scheduled for 6 rounds.
6 rounds.
Oh.
Jesus
How many
Christ.
Did it go?
2.5.
What, was the guy just a bad? What was the deal?
Do you really want to know? I'll tell you right what the deal was.
Yeah.
He did everything but fight to train. He hired a Pilates instructor. He ran to get his wind up. Good for him. God bless him. He hired a dietitian and lost 20 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
He hired a yoga instructor so he would be more flexible and calm. And then at the end, and this is all I've heard, that we would talk about the fight, or somebody would talk to him about the fight, and he'd vomit. He was so nervous. Mm-hmm. So then he hired a hypnotist, but that scared me because that actually seemed to work.
Mm-hmm.
He acted unafraid, and he's much, but when you see this tape, which we'll put up, he's way bigger than I mean, way, not even in the ballpark. I'm 5'6.5", 155. He's got me by 45 pounds, and a lot of it's height.
George Foreman used a hypnotist to fight Ali.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
The Rumble in the Jungle?
See, Rumble in the Jungle. See, one of those was Joe Frazier, I think.
Right.
Either way, he was so... Can you imagine how much Ali would get into your head, pardon the pun, before a fight?
Right.
So you're fighting a guy that is, you know, has a godlike status. Forget about local DJ. So he went to a hypnotist to try to calm the voices in his head, which is probably smart if you're doing that.
Well, I was laughing at that with the Pilates instructor and the other stuff. And I mean, he boxed apparently 4 times is what I heard.
So he didn't train. He didn't train fighting. He trained in every other way. He wanted to look good with his shirt off.
Yeah.
Here's what the problem was with that is nobody punches man in the face. And that's what you got to get. The first time you get punched in the face, everything goes out.
Right.
And that's what I kept saying in my corner before I went in. I said, I truly believe I'm going to go out there and win this fight. And I didn't know he had done all this stuff yet. I just thought, I have the heart of a real fighter. I just don't have the lungs or the skills. But I've been training. You know, I've been training to throw. You saw me with
I have the heart of an Olympic world-class sprinter. I just don't have the legs. Or the 100-meter
time. When Adam and I were using the mitts, he'd say jab, right, hook.
Right.
And every time I've ever fought, I'd think in my head, jab, right, hook, and somebody would hit me in the face, and I'd flip out, and I'd still win. But then I watch it on tape, and I fought like an angry 13-year-old girl. You know, everything I learned, and I just kept saying in my corner, I'm positive I'm going to win this fight. I just want to look like a boxer just once. I just don't want to get hit in the face and flip out. If I get hit in the face, I'm going to come up and go right back to jab, right hook.
What happens is everybody flails.
Right.
Pardon the pun. There's a switch that gets flipped, and the switch is not let's conserve and let's work on technique. It's sort of freak out switch.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's how you drowned.
Right.
You fall into the water, and a switch gets thrown, and that switch isn't slow, even strokes. Pace yourself, time your breathing. That switch is freak out.
Right.
And you go up, you know, it's
exactly why you also drown the guy trying to save you.
Right. And that's why when you're training to be a lifeguard, part of it is the feet, they jump on you, so you get the feeling of being drowned, and you don't freak out when someone's doing that to you.
You know that because you were a lifeguard, the only Jewish lifeguard up at Yosemite for a summer.
The only lifeguard that ever says,
what ends up happening is it's like, I always picture like just a plate full of black powder and you throw a match on and it just goes poof. It just goes up. You just go off and it makes a nice flame, but then it goes out almost moments later because the adrenaline, it's that weird fight or flight thing. The fight or flight thing isn't made to go 6 rounds. It's it's meant to go 100 feet and find a tree.
Sure.
Right.
So that's what ends up happening. And the first thing that goes is technique.
Right. If I'm, and you got to remember, I did the celebrity box with Greg Brady, who I kill. But if you watch it, I kill him the same way he tries to kill me, like idiots.
You end up just first off, you figure out what's my good hand.
Right.
And you figure that out real quick. And then you try to sort of hold them with the other hand and continuously pound them with your good hand. The problem is you have to go there, back and there again, and boxers should be going there with their right hand and then going there with their left a millisecond later.
Yeah.
And the thing is, for me, this is hard to do in radio. I have to be no further away to have anything left on my arm than about 9 inches from the person I'm hitting.
Right.
Or the person who's trying to hit me can be 14 inches away because he's really tall and has long arms.
Got it, because you have a shorter wingspan.
So I have to get in there and think, what's my good hand, and throw it. And while I'm throwing it, I'm getting hit in the face, theoretically.
So this video tape can be seen on AdamCarolla.com now. Is it up?
No, I just brought it with me this second, but I'm getting all over the my personal email that it is on YouTube right now.
Okay.
So but I don't know that to be true. It just says that.
We will have it loaded on our
and
site.
And cut down, because
ASAP.
It's 15 minutes long, and there's 2.5 minutes of fight tops.
Right, right. There's the time in between the rounds and all that.
Forever.
So the guy just never fought before. He wasn't used to it. His adrenaline was working, but not in a good way.
I don't know that his adrenaline, to be honest. I'll make this brief, and then when you hear the details, I will tell you those. He would, what they kept calling, turtle. I went out with my hands at my sides, touch gloves, and he went way back, so he could not hit me.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to look tough, so I put my hands completely at my sides, just like I was standing there. And he came in an inch at a time, an inch at a time, and he was still too far away to hit me, so I didn't put my hands up. And he throws a jab, and lean into it with my forehead on purpose, and then look at him. He does it again, and I do it again. I just move like an inch, because I had seen it in a movie called Hard Times with Charles Bronson. So as long as he's doing this and doesn't step forward, I don't raise my hands. And he keeps jabbing, and I just keep nodding my head like maybe an inch, going from maybe my nose to my forehead. So what, 2 inches?
You're letting him hit you.
But he's not. He's barely touching me, or I wouldn't let him do it. He's a big man. He's so scared to get close enough. His glove is touching my forehead, yes, but hitting me by no means, or I wouldn't have done it. He's a big guy. I would not have played like that. So he's just too far away and too scared. And then I go, okay, we can't do this all night. So I'll make this brief. I then kill him in a way that everybody who sees this and likes me is still going to feel terrible for this guy.
Really?
You're just going to feel awful.
No, I want to see it.
What, you went in with one big punch and knocked him down?
Well, you want how the fight ends, or you want how the nose breaks? Or
I want all of it.
Is his nose broken?
All over the place.
Really?
And that's bloody, right?
It wasn't terribly bloody. It was bloody, but they got it in there really fast. And since there were basically no rules, you know, they'd stop the blood with a towel forever and then turn this poor bastard loose to get killed again.
And he was just paralyzed. He couldn't
I don't know what was
function.
Wrong. The thing that here, two things went right and wrong for me. One was, I'd do anything at him at all. Like, you know, Corolla's an Oregon. Jab, right, hook, right? So I just throw the jab and get ready to throw this big right.
Yeah.
And instead of doing anything about the jab, he would put both hands up, put his head down, and bend over.
The turtle.
The turtle. And stay there. Sometimes I didn't even hit him. I just stand there and mock him.
I call that move the hedgehog, but...
Right, for different reasons.
It's different because it's the one Ron goes into when he's trying to get in his own jump.
Not Jeremy.
At one point, he actually fights back. I open every round the same way. He will not come close enough to get hit, so I put my gloves down and just take him. I just let him swing away, and he's so far away. His gloves touch me, but my head doesn't move, my hair doesn't move, nothing.
Did he offer any kind of excuse after the fight?
He didn't offer English language
or explanation. He did no talking.
He was
knocked silly.
He was carried out. No, he did not leave under his own power as far as I can remember.
He left on a stretcher?
That when I went over to give him congratulations and try and be a good sport and say, I stopped the music and stopped the announcer and everything, and I said, I just want to give, you know, all the credit in the world to this guy, I'd have stopped getting up a long time ago. I get it that I win this fight, but I would have stopped getting up to my feet a long time ago.
Can we get this guy on the phone? I want to know if he's all right.
You know, literally, what a bizarre thing. He starts his show is on like Sundays, right? He started his vacation the next day. He's in Florida. Because I said, are we to do your show today? I was dying to do the show to talk about it. And he sounded, by the way, he sounded fine. He sounds like you're pretty good.
Okay.
He even told me where he was sore. But, so, do you want me to do the fight story or the girl story?
Jesus, I don't know.
I don't know, because I don't want to waste up the whole show here, buddy. I don't want to do what's wrong. I want to do the right thing.
Well, now, what's left of the fight story?
All right, I'll make the fight story this super quick. So it's horrifying now. I'm doing exactly what you said. Instead of hitting him to the face,
right,
and then going crazy on him, when he turtles up, I step to the right and hook to his kidneys, and then I uppercut to the face, the uppercut, which I've never ever hit anybody with ever because I've never thrown. I've learned it. And then somebody hits me in the face and you freak out.
Right.
I've never actually thrown an uppercut. Uppercut breaks his nose all over his face.
No.
I jab, he turtles, I step to the right, I slam to his kidneys, that shocks him, his arms open up, I just take a left, I just go straight up the pipe, and you can see it, man. You can Left uppercut.
Did you guys work on that combination?
Yeah,
I actually even worked on the double left uppercut, which I totally didn't get, but a big body doesn't move that much. When I broke his nose, he didn't go flying, it was a horrifying thud, and he was still there to hit again.
Mm-hmm.
So I go... wham! Up the middle, and...
Were you guys wearing headgear?
No.
Why not?
And they dropped the weight of the gloves. I don't know. Like, the rules changed, man. No headgear, 14-ounce gloves.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you have
and they
rep?
Were bad gloves, too. They were really... The padding, I asked my guys. They said,
right.
You know,
they said,
what's going on here? Yes, as a matter of fact.
Reyes are puncher's gloves. Mexican
All the weight of them's in the back, in the wristband.
They're Mexican. They're Reyes... There's different gloves, you know. It's not only about how many ounces are the gloves. Most pros fight with 10 ounce, sometimes 8 ounce, which is amazingly small. They spar with 16 ounce. But then they're different gloves. And the Reyes is known as a puncher's glove.
That's what they
because
kept saying.
Reyes has more padding in the wrist than it does in the knuckles.
Let's say it weighs 14 pounds.
Yeah.
14 ounces. 8 ounces are in the wrist thing you tie on. So these tiny gloves.
When
you
said 14 pounds, I was going to correct you, and then I thought, well, the analogy still works.
Yeah.
Let's say it weighed 1,400 pounds. 800 pounds would be in the
wrist. So the gloves are tiny.
Right. They're not good to get hit with.
And no headgear is brand new. Nobody said anything. As a matter of fact, we specifically said headgear.
It's a weird thing to have a boxing exhibition with no headgear. It's a very strange thing.
Do they wear headgear in the Olympics?
Yes, they do. And they wear it in all amateur fights, and they wear it in all sparring, and it's just something you wear. It doesn't stop you from getting knocked out.
Yeah.
But it stops you
much.
From being cut and things
and
like that.
It usually stops a broken nose because there's padding on the cheek that comes out to about nose level.
Right.
But otherwise, they don't do that much.
Right.
Hi.
So, to conclude.
I will conclude right now. They grab him and act like they're stopping the fight, and I don't want the fight to stop. It's too soon. I've won. There's nothing this guy has. He cannot hurt me. I could do the fight with no hands and just tire him out. He's dead.
Right.
So please don't stop this fight. So I'm mugging for the ref and stuff, trying to get over him because he's pretending he wants to swing at me, but you know he doesn't. And sure enough, because there are no rules. I mean, the ref has stopped the fight. He's waved it off.
Right.
We talk him out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the guy go. So I take my left hand.
We, meaning you and him.
Well, and me and the other guy, although the other guy I don't think meant it. Other guy thinks the fight's over so he can say anything he wants now.
Right.
So I take my left hand and hold it in the air and put it way up behind my back, as far as it'll go, like you're being handcuffed by the police.
Mm-hmm.
I take my right hand and I'm yelling to the audience that I'm going to fight the rest of these six rounds one-handed.
Mm-hmm.
So... I mean, I've got to wedge up because I don't want it to come out accidentally. I want it to be clear I'm fighting one-handed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I've got my arm pulled up as far as it'll go so it won't slip out. I hold up my right hand and I'm yelling I'm going to fight the fight right-handed. And the guy comes alive.
How many people are there?
1,000 or so. Like I said, you'll see it on the tape. It's not the biggest event in the world. It wasn't a huge financial success for the guy. I wouldn't think because they had to pay helmet and POD and stuff like that.
Right.
But I've got my right hand in the air, like almost in the black power symbol, right?
Right.
And out of the corner of my eye, I see him coming.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to take this moment because I'm mugging for the audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it couldn't have worked out worse for him. He's at a 90-degree angle running towards me. Mm-hmm. I see him with plenty of time. I bring my fist down to my shoulder, just because you will, turn to a 90-degree angle, and punch with my hips like you would if you were punching a bag that was just standing there.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs into it like a freight train and reacts like he's been shot. He just essentially dies on the spot. He falls flat to the ground. Some people come flying into the ring and help him up. And he pushes them away like he's okay and then just falls again. So they pick him back up and he's going to his corner and he falls again. He doesn't know where he is.
Mm-hmm.
He won't let people help him yet. He can't walk. And he just keeps falling over. And I'm thinking... did I just kill this guy? This is bad.
How old is he?
30. So he's 17 years younger than
30 years of age. Mm. He's got himself into decent shape. He's allegedly had... does he have any kind of athletic background at
apparently
all?
Apparently not, because people were
telling me... But he does a boxing show?
Apparently he's a boxing freak and commentator, but that's why he ended up fighting, because people started calling in on his own show, shut up till you've gone around.
Right. All right,
so
we need to break because Frank Vincent, Phil Leotardo.
Such a good episode last night.
Oh, he was all over it. Phil Leotardo next. You can go to AdamCarolla.com. We'll get this tape up for you so you can see it for your own eyes. Well, we're glad you're safe, and we're glad you're victorious.
Thank you.
We will talk a little fighting with Frank Vincent, who's currently fighting with Tony Soprano, coming up to the last episode ever, next on The Adam Carolla Show.
Back to The Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Teresa Strasser, and Danny Bonaducci from The Sopranos.
Let me tell you a couple of three things. Anthony Soprano has no respect for this thing. He's a guy who stepped over his own uncle to grab the big seat. His father's brother. And I took his fat f***ing hand in friendship.
Foley.
And the veto thing. The man harbors a f***ing.
Frank Vincent is on The Adam Carolla Show.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's one of the best intros I've heard for him.
All over HBO as well. Frank?
Hi, Adam. How are you?
Great to speak to you. I must say, we were watching, me and my wife, who, you know, blurs the lines between fantasy and reality. She's the same woman that says, I've hurt my dog Molly's feelings because I didn't say goodbye to her when I left the house.
Right. Gotcha.
And that Molly's clearly upset. Right. Things like that. Her stomach was audibly gurgling during last night's Sopranos episode.
Molly's or your wife's?
My wife's.
Okay.
And possibly Molly's as well.
Yep.
She was upset. That these people, these family members were not only, you know, you talk about the last as long as you want, but like Cher went on a concert retirement tour 15 or 20 times. It started in the mid 60s and Barbara Streisand. Everyone does that. I'm going to retire. And then they come out of retirement. But when people are physically dying, when Cher dies, we're not all going to be going, please, she'll be out of the grave and on tour again in two more years.
Yeah.
That's what happened on The Sopranos last night. People were dying and it was hitting home that this is it.
The door was closing.
Yes, and Frank Vincent's character was so pivotal.
You had such an amazing monologue when you decided it was time to decapitate the Soprano part of the organization. And the best line of the whole night, which I didn't understand, and maybe you can explain it. I loved it, but I didn't get it. My scrapbook doesn't have any scraps.
I think I got it.
Well,
Frank can tell us.
He was just planning his sex life.
I think probably in my mind when I said it, or I had to say it, it was just a throwaway that Phil... just said, you know, my scrapbook doesn't have any scraps. And they looked at each other. They totally didn't understand it.
It seems like somebody was saying, you know, what about the history? And he's like, I don't have any fat on my scrapbook.
Right.
Meaning, I got a scrapbook that has dear friends and family members in it, not guys I sort of have known for 20 years.
All right.
How weird of a line is this that we all get something different? That's
what you get out of it.
I've got that he has a scrapbook that he either purchased or been given to him so he can have the highlights of his life. And he doesn't have any.
Mm. Isn't that terrific?
Interesting.
That's like all poetry. It's interpreted by the reader.
He's decided, where are the highlights of my life? My scrapbook's empty.
That's great.
Interesting.
This is the genius of the writing.
Right. You've been in, because Phil Leotardo was in prison for 15 years or something 20, like
yeah,
that. 20 years.
Yeah.
So now Phil Leotardo, we're, of course, speaking to Frank Vincent, who plays Phil Leotardo. He's out. He's... has no scraps in his scrapbook, and he's running out of time, and he's going to be proactive. Last night's Sopranos. I mean, if there ever was... Look, if last night's episode was the first Sopranos episode you'd ever seen in your life, you'd still be looking forward to the last episode.
Episode.
You want to talk about a build-up.
Yep.
Right.
So, obviously, the last episode of Sopranos ever, arguably... probably one of the most highly decorated TV shows ever in terms of Emmys and accolades and things like that. Critical acclaim.
Like epaulets and stuff.
No.
What the hell are these guys wearing?
Purple hearts.
No, Iron Cross.
I'm saying historically, The Sopranos will be mentioned in the same breath as, I don't know, Seinfeld or I don't
MASH.
Know, MASH or whatever. Yeah. Certainly in the serious one-hour drama category,
it's the winner.
I think it would be the winner 50 years from now when people are in college and they're studying this stuff. Yeah. They'll be studying Sopranos. So here you are in the last episode of one of the most significant hour-long drama TV shows, probably the most ever. That's got to be kind of cool, Frank.
Well, Adam, I'm a drummer. I started out 18 years old playing the drums, and I played in a lot of recording studios. I played for a lot of big stars, and I evolved myself into playing lounges, and I started doing some stand-up comedy with Joe Pesci and this and that. And if somebody had told me during my drumming days when I was getting $25 a night that Nancy Sinatra would sing Big Boss Man to me on the greatest television show ever written, I would say that's a dream that cannot come true. So as an actor, as an entertainer like yourself, as a musician, it's a hell of a place to be, and I'm really grateful for it.
It would have been great you explaining that to your wife. I just found out I was going to be the number one actor in the number one drama, except for it's not on the Dumont Network. It's some place called the Hobo Channel.
Right. Can you imagine that?
Evidently, there's more than 2.5 channels in the future, people.
Right, exactly.
Yes. Exactly. I mean, who would have guessed, and I'm guessing when we're talking about you being 18-year-old and drumming, there were 3 or 4 networks, maybe less.
Yeah.
And about 3 and one that showed cartoons.
Right.
Yeah,
and
wrestling. Yeah, we had wrestling.
And this wouldn't have been possible on a network.
No.
And so if you think about it for a second, I've never really even thought about this. No commercial breaks.
Exactly.
See, when you're doing a sitcom, you can break all you want.
Yep.
But when you take a break, now you've broken the tension.
Right. Yeah,
suspended the disbelief thing is gone now because you're looking at a guy arguing with his wife at a Home Depot commercial moments later, and it immediately yanks you out of your reality, which you created.
Your living room in LA instead of your steamy little flat in New York.
Well, we should say a spoiler alert if you didn't see it last night, but it was a bloodbath.
Yes.
A couple of main characters didn't make it, and possibly for me, the bloodiest scene when Dr. Melfi fires Tony as a patient.
Unbelievable.
That was great.
Tony's going, he doesn't know where, I mean, he's lying on a bed with an M14. This is where his life is, right?
Yeah, that was the end of the episode. And they do that great thing they do, which is once you know the hit is on, then all you have to do is show a close-up of the guy turning the car over, just literally turning the keys.
Right.
My wife put her hands over her eyes just to see a guy start up a Cutlass, you know, because you're freaked.
How did your wife do when Bobby Bacala bit it?
That's Alan Taylor. You know, Alan Taylor directed the episode and was brilliantly directed.
Absolutely.
And talking about turning the keys on, twice in my career I've been blown up.
You were blown up in Las Vegas, right?
No, I was
casino.
Was
I'm sorry, casino.
I was blown up in Witness to the Mob, and I was blown up in Wise Guys, Danny DeVito movie.
Yeah, that's right. De Niro got blown up.
Yeah, in the casino. Yeah,
casino. Right.
So standard thing. They blow up people.
I know. Even when the guy hit Tony's alarm and it made the chirp on his Cadillac Escalade, I sort of breathed a little sigh of relief when nothing happened.
Right.
Yep.
Oh, but it's coming. So,
that train store moment.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Now, I must admit, I was on the road. I have not seen this, so I'm kind of decoding.
Oh, you haven't seen it.
Not this episode. There are some spoilers for me, but I work here. I'm not taking off my headphones.
It's still gonna get you, even if you hear about it.
Okay, yeah. Good.
There's one more episode to go, so come on, people.
Yeah.
If people's heads are gonna roll, that's fine. You shouldn't be surprised when people start dropping like flies. So now we get to the very last episode. And
Adam, just a second. Mm. You just said the heads are going to roll. Mm-hmm. I want you to remember that when you see the next episode.
No.
I want you to remember what you just said.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Is it Tony's? Is it yours?
Oh, I'm not telling you that. Adam just coined the phrase.
Heads are going
to
roll.
Heads are going to roll. I just want you to remember that, and you'll know what I'm talking about.
All right. Well, Frank, Vincent, promise we'll be talking 1 week from now about the biggest episode of, or most talked about, at least, episode television ever, The Sopranos, final episode. And Frank, if you want to get in touch with our good friend Frank Vincent, you can go to frankvincent.com. You can pick up The Guy's Guide to Being a Man's Man.
Go home and get your fucking shine box.
You can get your go home and get your shine box t-shirt. It's all there on frankvincent.com. Frank, mazel tov to you,
my friend.
You've made it.
Yeah,
you've made it to the end, and not only made it to the end, but managed to be the storyline in the last episode of the greatest television series ever, The Sopranos.
What a thrill. It's a thrill to talk to you guys about it. Thank you very much.
Oh, God, love you. Frank Vincent, everyone, and we'll talk to you. What a stand-up guy Frank Vincent is, because, you know, look, I'm sure he's being pulled in 1,000 different directions. It would very easily have Angie come in here. She does 5 times a week and say, Frank Vincent, we can't find Frank Vincent, or he's not picking up
the
phone.
He's doing Today Show.
He's wherever, doing whatever, on top of whomever. Sure. Every single Monday at 6:42, there is Frank Vincent. He's not talking to his lapdog. He's not distracted. He's not driving his car.
Pooch.
He's not doing anything other than talking to us. God love Frank Vincent.
You know, though, but for every ending, there is a beginning. Mm-hmm. Don't you have a premiere tonight? Isn't your big premiere tonight?
Yeah, Hammer.
Oh. Well, now, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I called a premiere because I don't know what else to call it.
Right.
But it's more of a showing.
A screening.
A screening for friends, family, and some industry types.
So does that mean I don't have to wear a tux or anything?
You do not, and that's the point. No red carpet, no paparazzi, just good friends and a good time.
Cool.
So I'll see you there tonight.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah.
What's going on in the news, baby doll?
Well, guess who's in the slammer already? Paris Hilton. She went a little early. I have what she had to say before going into prison and the hilarious way that Sarah Silverman slammed her at the MTV Musical.
I was watching that, and they were just showing Sarah. And I mean, Sarah was on stage, obviously. We'll see her tonight at the movie. We can heap praise on her in person. But when stupid people are being made fun of, they never look dumber because they look confused.
Yes. Right.
It's sort of the look your dog has when he catches you masturbating. Huh? Is my owner in trouble? Is he hurting himself? What? There's a smell in the air, but what the hell is going on?
Like,
that perplexed, puzzled, that bewildered. She's sort of, I know I should be PO'd, but I'm not sure if I should be laughing or should I be upset. And if I don't laugh, am I going to look like a spoiled sport? On the other hand, if I do laugh, do I just look like a retard? She had a great, like, if you want to know what truly stupid people look like at their stupidest, you know, because stupid people who are good looking, like Paris Hilton is good looking and stupid.
Yeah.
So when you're good looking, that'll carry you. When she looks smart talking on her cell phone.
Yeah, she's
the world's dumbest person. She's talking about culottes or shoes or handbags. She's having a conversation with nobody about nothing, but she looks damn good doing it. This is why we have models.
Right.
You turn on the TV, you see hot-looking 23-year-old chicks, but they put glasses on them. They have them giving business presentations, and you go, I want that copier. When stupid people are being made fun of, they're being mocked, or being, they never look dumber.
They don't get it.
She looked retarded. She needed a wind-up beanie on her head.
Well, it's extremely satisfying to hear Sarah stick it to her.
Well, we'll hear that next and much more when the news comes around on the Adam Carolla Show.
Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Los Angeles, California. A 35-year-old man ran into a church, set several small fires, and stabbed a churchgoer. He was armed with a sword and dressed as a ninja. Definitely not a Jew.
Well, we have a clubhouse for Definitely Not a Jew 07. T.
Yes.
What's going on in the news?
Teresa Strasser, the number one Jewish news reporter on this station right now.
After spending an evening at the MTV Movie Awards, Paris Hilton went to Linwood, California, where she began serving her three-week sentence at the Los Angeles County Jail for violating probation in an alcohol-related reckless driving case. 10:30 last night, she checked in. The 26-year-old heiress was booked, and she is in the special needs unit. Now, before she went to jail, she was, of course, on the red carpet at the MTV Movie Awards, and she discussed her feelings about her upcoming stay in the Slammer.
I'm doing okay. Obviously a little scared right now. I'm scared, but I'm being strong, and I'm ready to face my sentence, and I hope that this can be an example to other young people and the decisions they make and use it as something positive.
Sure, there's a lot of folks just like her. I remember when I was growing up, I also, my dad owned, well, he's, his last name's not Carolla, his last name's real last name is Red Roofberg.
Right.
He was the heir to the Red Roof Inn.
Sure.
Monopoly. We grew up having a chain of Red Roof Inns. And so I know what it's like. I know what it's like to spin out. It's nobody. See,
when you take a girl to a hotel and she'd black out, that's when they got the name Roofy. It was actually from the Red Roof.
The original ones were red, yeah. Nobody feels sorry for her, obviously.
Well, not Sarah Silverman, who last night hosted the MTV Movie Awards.
I mean, the only thing worse than going to the joint would to have a collective America laugh their ass off.
Sure.
To have every single person in the country outside of your own family laugh at you and think, good. This is awesome stuff.
Yes, well, here she is, Paris Hilton, sitting in the audience of the MTV Movie Awards, not knowing what's going to be in host Sarah Silverman's monologue.
Mm-hmm.
She probably could have assumed her name might come up.
I certainly would have.
But here is Sarah Silverman.
In a couple of days, Paris Hilton is going to jail. The judge says that it's going to be a no-frills thing, and that is ridiculous. She is totally going to get special treatment. As a matter of fact, I heard that to make her feel like more comfortable in prison, the guards are gonna paint the bars to look like penises. I think it's wrong too. I just worry that she's gonna break her teeth on those things. Anyway.
And, you know, the audience, the joke was funny, but not hysterical, but the audience went nuts because they loathe Paris Hilton that much.
And they're
sitting right next to her.
Yes.
And the look of, again, when stupid people are confused and being made fun of, they never look dumber. She just looked insanely stupid sitting there. And the audience went nuts. And see, here's the whole thing. Several years ago in this country, that would have been considered humiliating. Somebody's father, like Sarah Silverman's dad and Paris Hilton's dad, would have had to duel.
Right.
Or their men would have, their seconds would have come calling.
I've said 100 times they should have never put an end to dueling.
Yes, they would have been dueling, and you know, you would have insulted the honor of Paris Hilton, would have been a pariah. There would have been no man that could have been seen at her side, so on and so forth.
There are countries today, and possibly states, that would set her on fire.
Right. Now, you go there and you seek it out. Point is it's just more Paris Hilton talk for Paris Hilton, who doesn't do anything anyway, except for have us talk about her.
Absolutely. Sarah Silverman also took a little jab at Lindsay Lohan, who's sort of falling out of favor. I think people have patience for her because she's a talented actress and, you know, she at least has some sort of skills.
But can I say this about Lindsay Lohan? How low is the bar? I mean, first off,
I don't know, but she can still get into an underage.
That's right. No matter how low that bar gets, her fake ID still works.
Yeah.
How low is the bar? Because, see, normally we have the Nicole Richies and the Paris Hiltons, the know-nothing, do-nothings.
I mean, these people of the apocalypse.
Yes, these people are filled. If you cut them, they bleed sawdust and cocaine. There is zero inside them.
Yeah.
Lindsay Lohan possesses some talent.
Yeah.
Some talent. She's a competent actress.
Right.
It's not like her movies do gangbuster at the busters at the blocks pop up.
Right, gotcha.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They don't make tons and tons of kajillions. She's a competent actress, but Is it that hard to be a competent actress in this town? Aren't there dozens, nay, hundreds of young women that are more talented than she is?
I've got to come up with a better name because this guy's a very good friend of mine. But yeah. I always say, and this is not an actress, this is an actor, if Eric Estrada can make $14 million on Chips, how hard can acting be?
It isn't.
Well, here's the thing.
It isn't very hard.
To be competent. I'm not saying everybody can be De Niro. But I'm saying a lot of people could be Estrada.
Right.
Yes.
In comparing those two, though, I'd say Lindsay Lohan wasn't born with a silver spoon. Her dad's been in
jail.
Right,
she was. He just went up her dad's nose.
She's not a trust fund baby. You can sort of give her a little bit of slack.
Yes, I know. But people seem to be doing that thing where it's like, look, Lindsay Lohan is a serious loss here because she's such a force as an actor. And it's like, she does a good job, just like most other people that are getting paid to act.
Yes.
It's interesting because I pick her as I already write her off as dead.
Well, it's very troubling. I thought she was phenomenal in the movie Mean Girls. But speaking of Mean Girls, this is a very sad report that's come out about Lindsay Lohan. She was palling around with this club DJ named Samantha Ronson. And some gossip sites are reporting that, you know, that picture of Lindsay passed out in the car.
Mm-hmm.
I think she might have been in Ronson's car. Well, how did the paparazzi know where she was? I guess the reports are that this Samantha Ronson allegedly was telling the paparazzi where to find Lindsay. And was, you know, being paid to sell out her friends.
Stilly.
So, yeah, Lindsay Lohan doesn't have a lot of friends, and especially not Sarah Silverman, who had this to say last night at the MTV Movie Awards.
I feel bad for Lindsay Lohan, obviously. She just makes me sad. I know, whatever happened to that poor, sweet, freckle-faced little girl who only went to rehab once? She needs structure. She needs a father figure. You know what I mean? She needs someone who will take the time to tell her that she is a rude little pig.
That's right. Yeah.
We should
team her up with Baldwin.
Coffee's for closers,
smart. Well, so far, you know, the news stories of the year.
Yeah.
Put in order would be probably Paris Hilton, you know, Alec Baldwin, Lindsay Lohan,
Anna Nicole,
and somewhere the 31 people that died over there in Virginia Tech would come in maybe 11th or 12th place.
I was wondering where you'd put them.
And by the way, the war.
The war.
Well, it depends on what day you ask us.
The war is an ongoing whatever, but the Virginia Tech thing under Imus. There's now when the smoke settles on the year and we go back and sift through the wreckage of it, much more ink given to Imus and Lohan and Paris Hilton than there was given to the Virginia Tech folks. And now, by the way, it's completely gone. There's 31 people. And again, not 31 transients, not 31 junkies, not 31 prostitutes, throwaways, 31 young people and engineering students, for Christ's sake. Yeah. I mean, I was a ceramics major in high school. It wouldn't have been so bad if someone came in and shot up the ceramics class. It wouldn't have been a loss.
I was a ceramic.
First night, it was actually an actual spittoon. The point is still no timeline, still no what have the cops done, still not much about the guy's family who shot everybody.
There's just a dearth of information on that story.
A big story for the few days it came out, but overall we're more interested in Paris Hilton.
Well, here's another prison-related story. Are you guys familiar with the concept of a conjugal visit?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Sure.
That's where usually you're married, and they let you have sex with your spouse once a month or something like that.
Absolutely.
The good news is you can get married in the joint.
Yes.
Yeah. And then have a conjugal visit.
Right.
Which to me, I'll go for the conjugal visit where they're grandfathered in. You were married before you got in the joint, and then you get to get laid. When you get into the joint, you just get married so you can have a conjugal visit. And not only, be prepared to be outraged, everybody. Not only do you get to have conjugal visits, you get to sire kids. Obviously, if you do the conjugal math,
right?
After you're married in the joint. So, for instance, Tex Watkins of
Charles Manson
family fame sired, I think, three kids from inside the joint. So, Here's what your taxpayer dollars are paying for. He gets to go in and stab a bunch of innocent people. Then he gets to go in the joint. Instead of being put down in the ground like he should have been, he gets to nail chicks, crazy chicks, oftentimes hot chicks, he met via letter writing campaigns. Have his gene, nature or nurture, passed on. So you have a guy. And by the way, Ted Bundy has a kid, too. Ted Bundy, after taking pliers to your 14-year-old and doing unspeakable things to her, gets to get laid in the joint and gets to have a kid in the joint. Not put down or before he got put down, he gets that. So those of you who are worried about the death penalty, really, you want these guys? And let's just think about the nature involved with Ted Bundy. Let's just think of, yeah, you have Ted Bundy's genes
right,
running through you.
Yes.
There's a difference between Ted Bundy and your average serial killer.
Yes.
When Adam said what he said about the pliers, that's literal.
Yes.
Right. Well,
yes. Do you have that? Sorry, T, I'm railing against the man here. You have Ted Bundy's genes floating in you. And then worse, you have the woman that thought it'd be a good idea to lay down with Ted Bundy.
I was going
to
ask about
you.
You
have her genes running through you. And then, like I said, nature or nurture, you're being raised by the chick that thought it'd be a good idea to have sex with the guy that's killed tons of other chicks with pliers when they were 14. We got her running around now.
Her.
Or him or whoever it is.
She's the one he picked out of the hundreds that offered.
Yeah, so you're combining.
They get fan mail by the truckload, these people.
Yes, right. You're combining poor judgment with homicidal and sociopathic.
Right. Now, listen, later on, I'm going to get on my high horse about Kevorkian, who I was watching on 60 Minutes last night. Let's not go nuts. Not everyone is precious. Ted Bundy should have been put in the ground immediately. Tex Watkins should have been put in the ground immediately. Instead, we got their kids, their grandkids, and their grandkids' grandkids running around here on this planet, everybody. That's what conjugal visits will get you. Thank you, Pete.
And I'd like to just add that anybody that names their child precious should be put under.
Yes. Well, let me just actually quickly, very quickly get to the story about conjugal visits.
Sorry.
Which is this. It is now California's passed a law, in California alone, to allow conjugal visits for gay and lesbian inmates.
Oh, I'd hate to clean up that trailer. There is a trailer they go to.
Right.
Absolutely right.
These are the people that suffer, the folks that are cleanup patrol.
Well, that's right. A conjugal visit in California can last up to 72 hours. It is usually in a trailer on the prison grounds, as you've mentioned. And sometimes the whole family and the kids get a chance to visit, but you have 72 hours to do what you want to do in the trailer. And now here in California, gay and lesbian prisoners will be allowed to have their same-sex partner come in.
They must lord that over the staff, whoever's involved with maintenance over there at the prison. Like, okay, Johnson, keep it up. And you'll be swinging a mop in the gay conjugal visit trailer. Is that what you want? You'll be pulling a CSI over there in the gay trailer. Is that what you want? I'll send you in there with the Woods Light. You will see a pentagram on the ceiling in semen. Do you understand me? Is that what you want? Keep going, buddy, because that's where you're heading.
There are free Americans that for $5 an hour do that in those little cups where you put a quarter in the slot.
Yes.
You ever seen those guys? I know I haven't. Standing there with a mop?
Listen. They put a roll of paper towels on the wall in those little booths, if anyone wants to know what they expect goes on in there.
Yes,
the conjugal visit. And by the way, I would design that trailer like the monkey cage at the zoo. It would be concrete everywhere, sloping down to one floor drain and a hose bib and 30-foot of hose right there. There would not be carpet or paneling or furniture. There wouldn't be a futon in that guy. It would be cement floor to ceiling. It would be a bunker. It would be a gay sex bunker. There'd be a hole, a drainage right in the middle and a hose, and that'd be the only thing in there.
Well, I got to tell you, if I was in prison, they'd have a bed of nails.
That's my point.
A month till I've seen her.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, for the record.
I'd do the straight one that way, too, but the gay one.
The gay one, yeah.
That's semen times two, baby.
For the record, there are a few types of prisoners who are not allowed conjugal visits under any circumstances. If you're on death row, if you're a sex offender, thank you. If you're serving life without parole, if you've caused trouble in prison, or if you've got a history of domestic violence.
This is, and by the way, though, like I said, the life without parole, these are new ones. Look, everybody. I just want to see these people go into the ground. I want to see Kevorkian be able to do his work his magic, yeah. And I want to see guys that are going to rot for 10 years and then get put into the ground or kill a guard along the way or sire some kids along the way or meet some nutty broads via letter-writing campaign along the way. Let's just put them down.
See, I have always, and everybody thinks I'm kidding when I say this, and maybe we'd make one or two mistakes, but I'll bet they did something. I think the witness stand and the electric chair should be the same thing.
It would be good until one of the guy who manned the button got a little happy and fried. Just the night watchman yeah. who was giving his testimony.
When you're sitting in the chair and the jury foreman says, and we find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree, they slap a little button and he just fries right there on the spot right then.
There you go. Screw due process. I'm Teresa Strasser.
Yeah. Well, he got due process. Yeah.
With the real news. You, CNN.
And then he made doo-doo in his pants. That's what happened.
His eyes blew up.
We need to take ourselves a little break. Christopher Hitchens is coming up next. He's the author of God Is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything.
This should be interesting.
Yeah, we'll do some arguing and some agreeing. On one hand, I'm an atheist, and when I hear about all the, you know, the Jews are going at it with the Muslims and everyone around the world, and Darfur and everywhere else is at each other because of religion, I go, ugh. God damn. I mean, please, where are all the atheists? And then every once in a while I hear about, I don't know, Mitt Romney, and he's a very devout whatever, and he's very into his family, and he would never whatever because of his religion and his faith. And I think, all right,
yeah,
good. Keeps him on the straight and narrow, or keeps a lot of guys on the straight and narrow. So I'm torn. We will tear me apart even further next on the Adam Carolla Show.
Today, heard she f***ed a guy in Reno. Just cause she's a slut.
Never had time to, like, really get to know myself. I always put all my energy into the man.
That's that hose hound Paris Hilton, who can't keep her toothpick leg shut.
That's hot.
Now she's going to prison. I hope they throw away the key. When you're a no-talent heiress, you get no sympathy. With no ass and no boobies. A hot chick I don't see.
I don't get to, like, spend time on me, so now I'm just getting to know who I really am.
Jail will only make her more famous, and that really bothers me.
I want to do, like, a really hot performance.
Mm-hmm. Well, now a little religious discussion. Yeah, on one hand, everyone makes that argument where they go, hey, you don't want religion? Would you rather be walking down the alley and have some atheists on the other side of it, or walking down a dark alley and have some Christians? Well, every guy on death row, there's no atheists in the joint.
Right.
And most of them grew up sort of God-fearing, or at least in environments that stress that.
And they say there are no atheists in foxholes, that's for certain.
Right.
When the bombs start going off.
I like atheists. And the notion that, well, if you're an atheist, how do you know right from wrong? Like, hey, if you're not a scientist, how do you know gravity?
Yeah, how do you know left from right? Well, I'm not a chimp, that's how.
I know right from wrong, just like I know gravity. If I drop an apple, it'll land on the ground. I don't have to be Newton to understand that. It just is. It's empirical. I don't like when people do that. Oh, no. No, you go ahead and fornicate with your wife's, you know, neighbor and your neighbor and kill everyone and covet their oxen and their wife and everyone else. I think certain things are just truths that we should understand. And I agree with part of the things that Christopher Hitchens' book says, which is you create religions. It is a team. You pick a team and now your team has to go crush the other team.
Well, his book is called God Is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything.
He's on the line now. Christopher Hitchens?
Hello there. How nice of you to ask me.
How is our... Wow. You sound like David Bowie.
Goodness me.
I like that.
I do, too.
Not that goodness has anything to do with it.
No, but Christopher, can you just say, just to humor us, can you just say this line, Ziggy played guitar.
Well, ground control to Major Tom.
Yeah, there you go. Good enough. Well, it turns out we're actually talking to Lennox Lewis.
Oh, Suffragette City.
Yes.
Right. Well, Christopher's a very well-known writer. He's written for Vanity Fair. He's written for a bunch of publications and has a lot of books.
So are you...
a few great albums.
Are you an atheist yourself, Christopher Hitchens?
No, I'm an anti-theist. In other words, you can be an atheist and just because you can't believe it, but you might wish it was true.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't wish it was true. I was just listening to what she was saying before. I don't like the idea of a celestial dictatorship that would be watching you while you slept.
Right.
And wouldn't leave you alone even when you were dead. I mean, I really am glad there's no evidence at all.
An anti-theist. I've never heard that term before.
I do like that, and I'm with you as well. I just say atheist for the most part just so people leave me alone. But I am not a fan of everyone's make-believe God, and I believe it gives them license to do a lot of things. And I love when people make their counter-argument where you go, where's your proof there's a God? And they go, where's my proof? How would all this have gotten here if there was no God? And I was like, oh, that's a great scientific argument. An invisible man invented it all.
Is the argument always scientific? I mean, there is the word and the idea of faith. What about faith? Doesn't that come in somewhere?
Faith is the wonderful, the no less wonderful
faith, idea,
that
yeah,
that
sure.
You should believe something because there's no evidence.
Well, I mean, faith is good for the Easter Bunny, too.
That's the answer. Faith is the answer to the invisible man question. It says, I believe it because there's no evidence for it at all. You have to just take it on faith. Well, fine. But don't ask me to respect that.
Right.
Or allow it to influence legislation, for example, or demand any taxpayers' money for it. I mean, tooth fairy people are fine also.
Right.
We don't have any huge regard for them. At least they don't come around to your house, and they don't blow themselves up at the airport.
I agree. We don't ask anyone to take anything on faith in this society except for this one incident. And here's... Christopher, you tell me whether you agree with this next statement or not. I don't believe that people believe nearly as much as they say they believe. And the reason I don't believe that is everyone talks about having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ or Allah or whoever. But if you ever hear somebody say, oh, God spoke to me and I spoke to God, you go, that guy's nuts.
That guy's a nut.
Now, why would you say that's nuts in a society where we believe that everyone has a personal relationship with Jesus Christ? And then secondly, why are you getting so violently angry when I tell you I don't believe in your God? You don't believe in him that much either. There's a little kernel in your brain that realizes I'm probably right, and that's why you want to kill me. Because you can't stand the voice of logic who's destroying your fairy tale.
But on the other hand, isn't there a kernel somewhere in the back of your brain that I think I believe I've heard you mention before that I don't want to say that because what if I'm wrong?
No, I just say that. I don't believe it. I don't believe most people believe it.
I don't just think you're right. I could almost say I knew you were right. I mean, I've been on tour with this book of mine. By the way, talking of factual evidence.
Yeah.
Available at fine bookstores everywhere.
That's right. That's a fact. God is not great.
And number one on the bestseller list at the moment, so you better hurry to get a copy.
That's right.
Which has the answers to all the things we're just touching on now. But I've been hawking it around the South in particular. I wanted the book tour to be
good
in Southern states to start with. You find everyone believes in a different version of the Bible there.
Well, sure. Nobody can read it.
This is a very a la carte society. When someone has a bumper sticker, which you do sometimes see, saying, Jesus is my best friend, you first think hypothetic, and second you think, well, it means that he's made up his own version.
Right.
Yeah. They all of them have. It's absolutely not true that more Americans believe in Satan than believe in Darwin.
Well, when I say Jesus is my best friend, I immediately mean my bar tab has been cut in half, which is, you know, that's a good buddy.
I've done the math on, see, I grew up in a family with no religion, not because they were making a moral statement. It's just church would have involved getting up, getting dressed, and going somewhere as a family, and the Corollas weren't down for that. Church and religion is something, and my family's into nothing. So we didn't want to burn any calories with religion, but also there are people who were rational and realized, look, if you grew up in a Muslim society, you'd be Muslim. If you grew up in a Jewish society, you'd be Jewish. And if you grew up in a Catholic society, you'd be Catholic. So does that make it true? Just the fact that you were born into this group?
Well,
if my parents were both devout Christians, then I'd be Christian.
That's also the easiest proof of what my book proposes, which is the religion is man-made.
Right.
And it shows. It shows, in other words, that it's invented by a species that's only half a chromosome away from the chimpanzees, as we now know.
Well,
it is man-made, there are hundreds of versions of it, and over time there have been thousands of versions of it, and H.L. Mencken once did a list of how many gods there have been in human history. It goes on for a very long time, and all of them had complete authority for a while.
Well, can I float you two theories, and I'll give you one, and you can respond to it. Tell me what you think. My personal theory is, when we found out we were the only species that really knew of our own mortality,
yes,
we had to think up something quick or go insane. The very first human being that saw a loved one, a colony member, a family member get eaten by a dinosaur said, this is way too painful to deal with. Right. Plus, I have to think about me getting eaten by a dinosaur or a grizzly bear. I better come up with something quick, otherwise we'll go nuts.
Of course, there's another book that says the first guy.
I hate to do this to you, but only creationists believe that we were still around when the dinosaurs were.
Well, you know what I mean.
In the Bible, of course, Cain kills Abel with the jawbone of an ass.
By the way, it's very noticeable that in Genesis there's no mention of any dinosaurs because, of course, they didn't know there'd ever been any. There were no kangaroos in there either. They're just all microorganisms.
I'm just going back in time to use a little hyperbole.
I know exactly what you mean. Religion doesn't die out for that reason. It only mutates because people are still going to be afraid of death, yes.
Yeah, well, it's useful.
The fact of the matter is that I don't think just because, and maybe you're right, religion is man-made, but I drove here in a Nissan today, mm-hmm. and it's man-made,
yeah.
and it got me to work.
Sure.
So it doesn't mean it doesn't exist just because it's been made by man. Man could be in need of something that it turned out existed. Hmm. Man's in need of an afterlife so he doesn't go insane. That doesn't mean he was wrong. It means he has a 50-50 shot.
Well, I don't know if it means 50-50.
Your analogy doesn't hold at all. By the way, I didn't think your bar tab one did either, if you don't mind my saying that.
Yeah, but the Gene Genie wasn't a good song.
You can not only prove the Nissan, you can design it, whereas you can only wish for an afterlife. You're not going to get one.
But what Danny, I believe, is saying is, it could be both. We could want it very badly, and it could exist.
Yeah.
Well, wanting it wouldn't disprove it. That's certainly true.
Right. So whether this exists or not,
and
obviously.
Does your book, in your opinion, disprove it, or is it just your theory, or do you think any reasonable man that reads God is not great?
I say that you cannot actually disprove the existence of God. You can only say that there is absolutely no evidence for it at all.
Right. But you don't have that burden for anything.
There's a book by a very brilliant scientist called Victor Stenger called The God Hypothesis. It's just out, who says that the evidence is now strong enough to say that it isn't true. He's very, very bold and very brilliant man, and he knows a great deal more about scientific hypotheses than I do. Mm-hmm. The thing is, once you can say there's no evidence to believe it, you can say we don't have to respect the religious. And that those who say not just they know God exists, which is one thing, that's a huge leap. No one's been able to cover the distance of that leap yet.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't just say that. They say, well, wait a minute, I know what God wants as well. I know him quite well. I know his mind.
Yeah.
I know what he wants me to eat. I know how he wants me to have sex or not.
Right.
With whom?
Well, what do you?
Yeah, I ignore him on that one.
I can tell you the same thing. I can make laws that affect you too. Now that is what religion is.
Christopher,
that's a deadly enemy of
ours. Christopher Hitchens is on the phone. God is not great. Number one on the New York Times bestseller list as we speak. Available in bookstores and online as we speak. Christopher, what about this whole Muslim thing? There's a religion for you.
Yes, and it's probably of the three monotheisms the most dangerous because it claims to be the last and final and absolute one.
Mm-hmm.
It says the others were fine. That Jewish stuff was good, a good try, and the Christian stuff even is all right. It especially praises all the bad bits of Judaism and Christianity, like stoning and the virgin birth and things like that. It says, you know, all that was good. But we are the absolute conclusive final, absolute, total solution.
Yeah, and
that's a very dangerous claim to be making.
Mm-hmm.
And it tends to suggest that if you look at me the wrong way, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, can I say this? First off, we have way too much respect for religion in general, and especially nutty religions. In my book, in this country, we always say, oh no, the overwhelming majority of these people are fine. They're peaceful people. I've heard some people from Muslim countries speak and say they're not a lot of moderates over there. They believe in that religion. Right. And when you believe in that religion, you're number one. It's like there's not a lot of moderate New England Patriot football fans.
Right.
They believe they should go to the Super Bowl, and they're not so even-handed about your team. What do you think about that, Christopher?
Well, no, if you go to, say, Indonesia, which I have done,
mm-hmm.
you can find a lot of people who practice it in a mild and friendly form. But that's because, you know, life experience does have an effect. You can have that for decades, generations.
Mm-hmm.
People adapt to what's obviously normal and human, but the fact is that the teachings of the religion remain what they are. And if things start to go wrong, then the imams will start to revive the call for holy war.
And that's what keeps happening.
Same with Christianity and all other religions. It goes bad in times of crisis. And the preachments that are always available and always are in the holy texts and are claimed to be the word of God are revolting and fanatical.
Well, my overall feeling is like this. To me, religion is a police force that's sort of out there, and I still speed. I look over my shoulder, but right, I still speed. I want a traffic cop inside of me. And I feel like that's what an atheist is.
Yeah.
You have to be in charge of your own moral decisions. You can't repent. There's no such thing as confessing your sins and getting it off your chest. It lives within you constantly. You are sort of your own little moral police force. Now, folks that argue against it think it's exactly the opposite. Right. I'm now freed up. There are no cops, and I get to drive as fast as I want. I don't buy it.
See, sure. I disagree with you, and I disagree with you vehemently on this, because most people, you're right about Christians. They don't believe it as much as they either say they do or at least would like to. I profess to be a Christian, yet I do despicable things with some regularity. But on the other hand, I have been in need, and this is just a fact for me. And when you talk about faith, it's something that it will be difficult to shake me from. I have needed the help of the God I was in church to worship and received it.
But let me ask you this. You hear about these guys that are preachers and then they get caught in a gay relationship.
Yeah. Right.
If they really believed that they had a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, and let's just put it this way. If I really believed in high school my stepmother could see me wherever I was, right, I wouldn't have masturbated.
Here's how I
knew I could close the door and get away with it.
She doesn't mind that much.
Here's how I feel about it, and I wonder what Christopher Hitchens thinks. Sometimes it's obvious and apparent the toxic effects of religion, but putting God aside and whether or not God exists, it seems as though people in religious communities, people who are part of a community, who go to church every Sunday, who have bake sales, there are studies that have shown that people who are members of these communities are happier. They receive comfort. Whether there's a God or there's no God, people who are in religious communities are happier.
What about it?
Now I hear that.
Wait, what was going to be your question?
That could be true, though. There's a lot of evidence the other way. There's a huge literature of people who are refugees from communities like that who say not so happy at all. It's like living
extreme communities, but by and large.
But I mean, suppose I grant that.
But it's still no
but
argument.
You are granting me that.
Suppose I grant it. I mean, the same would be true.
You don't need this cat to grant you anything.
But the same would be true if you believed that you were God yourself. That would cheer you up. I mean, why in that case I ask this question in my book, why doesn't it make people happier? Why do they not leave it at that and say, we have a wonderful secret.
Yeah.
We know that we're going to have eternal life. And we couldn't be more pleased at the possibility. Why do they have to say they can't be happy till I believe it too? Why can't they leave it?
If you want to know what the answer is, they don't believe it.
Yeah.
They don't believe it, and so they need to talk everyone around them into it so they can believe it, and it'll help them with their belief, and then they will kill you if you say you don't believe it.
I've
met a lot of blissed out zombies in my life who are members of all kinds of cults, and I certainly think...
I'd rather be a blissed out zombie than what I am.
Children are probably happier when they believe in Santa Claus on. The awful truth of the matter is we have to take responsibility for and think for ourselves, and that, alas, is going to mean a lot of anxiety.
I agree.
And stress.
Wait a minute.
I wouldn't be without you.
I don't know.
Hang on for a second.
I don't know that I believe you. You say
I don't want the nirvana that the Buddhists offer.
Now let me address something quickly.
What does the Buddhist say, the hot dog vendor, by the way?
I don't know what.
What does the Buddhist say, the hot dog vendor?
I don't know what.
It says, "Make me one with everything."
Like that.
Let me say this quickly. What Teresa is saying is true. Yes, people in the religious community may be, in fact, more happy.
Not because of God.
But what Christopher is saying is that still doesn't make it true.
What's more important than being happy? I don't care if it's true. I'd rather be happy.
Okay. Well, but just keep going then. Just so then, why don't you think you're 6'2 when you're 5'5?
There's some narcotics that can be recommended for that.
It's his point.
There's some narcotics that can be recommended as well. And there's a slogan.
But there are ill effects of narcotics, whereas if I go to church every Sunday, even if I don't really, or in my case, temple.
There are ill effects and mindless happiness, too, I can assure you.
But you know what, there are not.
If you want to avoid hangovers, stay drunk.
Well, let me ask you this then.
I'm working on it.
You have a best-selling book. You're making money hand over fist. You're on our radio show, and the first word of your book is God. So whether you believe in him or not, he just made you a buttload of money. Now, that don't you find that a curious and ironic thing that you wrote a book with God as your title, and you were delivered all sorts of manna from heaven?
No, my chest for irony is a little more strenuous than that.
Do you ever go to the bank and go, Jesus, I'm rich?
Yep.
Well, look, if I count my blessings, I start with my sexual charisma.
you know what? Actually, Christopher, I'm kind of feeling you.
There we go, you see. I mean,
are you single, Christopher? Because Teresa is.
No, I'm married quite a lot.
There is no God, you're right.
So, Christopher Hitchens on the phone, by the way. God is not great. Number one on the New York Times bestseller list. I have everyone knows my feelings, which is, you know, when I hear about Palestinians and I hear about Jews, and my first thing is I am always take the side of the Jews because I don't feel like they're pushing the fight. On the other hand, ultimately, if they just drop their nonsense, they could move on too. I would like to live in a society where this didn't factor in. I'm not talking about one where people didn't have faith and love toward their brother man and all the good stuff and all the Ten Commandments and all that, but where it didn't factor into decisions.
All the Ten Commandments.
What's that?
No, you can't want all of the Ten. You haven't looked at them lately.
Well, not all of them, but the point is where the government didn't factor it in. I would love to have everyone just drop the religion and get on with the religion of science and happiness.
Yeah, you know
I would
what?
Love that.
That'd be nice, but I don't think
it's not going to happen.
I don't think a godless world would be this violent.
The beauties of science.
I think it might be.
The beauties of science, which are extraordinary. Look at the double helix, or take a look through the Hubble telescope. It's a lot more beautiful than anything in the Bible, or the burning bush, or something like that. The constellations of philosophy, and all the ethical dilemmas that you can study by appreciating literature, which is where they really occur.
Let's put that question to you. If you could snap your fingers and all of a sudden there was no religion, do you think the world overall would be a better place or a less violent place, or would it be worse? Would we just spin into chaos?
Well, it sounds too much like John Lennon to say imagine no religion, but I let's say that religion had become a private matter for people. It wasn't imposed publicly, and there was no attempt to impose it on other people. Well, take the case you just mentioned. For a long, long time, there have been two nationalities, two nations, two peoples in Palestine. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, it's been very obvious what the answer should be, that there could be a two-state solution, half each, if you like.
Right.
Most Jews are in favor of that. The PLO officially is in favor of it. The United Nations resolutions, the international community, all in favor of it. Why can't you get such a simple thing? Because the religious nutbags on both sides are strong enough to veto it.
Right.
The settlers say, no, God gave us all of this land. He calls the Jews, and the Islamists say, you're right that God gave the land. It's just you're wrong about who gave it to. He gave it to us, and there should be no Jews here. And just as if that wasn't good enough to help out, come the American Christians saying, look, Armageddon is coming, and then that'll bring on the Messiah.
Right.
And the Jews say, well, what a coincidence. We sort of believe that, too. And the Christian right says, well, except for the fact that all the Jews are going to have to either be converted or die, we're with you.
By the way, this doesn't start sounding like nonsense to everybody eventually?
Yeah, but you're talking about extremists in all of these cases.
Right. I'm Christopher Hitchens. We have to pray to our commercial gods. But,
yes, we do.
I'm,
that's why I drove here in a Nissan and some other kind of car.
could you just sing a little Bowie for us, Christopher? You know it.
You love it.
Just try to remember the one, my favorite one.
John, I'm Only Dancing.
Is it off of Hunky Dory?
We could be heroes just for one day. I just can't remember how it starts.
It's a great song. I don't want to hear this.
Christopher Hitchens, God bless you. God is not great, name of his book. Brian going nuts over there with the Bowie songs. Listen, let's have him back tomorrow as Bowie.
Yeah. Nice.
think if he was right and his book was just called Because There's No God, his book was just called Is Not Great, it probably wouldn't be such a runaway bestseller. He needs God to make that money.
Well, but you could write a book about a serial killer. Wouldn't make you a fan of the serial killer.
I don't think he's a fan. I just think he needs God and somebody's belief in God to make that money. He needs Christians, Muslims. He needs them all to make a buck. He's not gonna have a runaway bestseller by people who agree with him.
No, I know what you're saying, but I don't know. I still think it sounds like a point, but I don't know that it is. It sounds right, but on another point, I don't know if he can be.
I don't mean that he
faulted
believes,
for that.
I don't think he's faulted at all. I'm saying without the faith of other Christians, Muslims, and Jews,
right.
He doesn't have a book there. I'm not saying that he is professing right. anything that's untrue in his heart and soul.
Right.
But our belief.
But without World War II, there's no Saving Private Ryan. I mean, it is true. It's a true
right.
statement.
Right.
But I don't know if it means anything. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
It sounds like it means something, but I'm not sure what the point is. I'm not sure if it means anything, really.
Why don't you go get your shine box?
I'm fairly confident what I mean by it.
Right.
I don't mean he believes anything different than what he says. I think
no,
he's
I know
100%
that.
Legitimate.
I get that point.
But he needs the people who have the faith to be shaken and to be afraid of this book.
If people weren't so invested in the concept of God, they wouldn't care about a book saying God is not
right. So the point has nothing to do with him and his belief.
Okay.
That's the difference. I'm not saying World War II doesn't believe. Didn't exist, therefore Private Ryan is crap.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying they're two separate animals that need each other.
I'm wondering if religion is, you know, if there was a graph or a chart, I wonder if it's on the decline or the increase.
In America, it's on the increase.
It's increase
yes,
over
it
here.
It has been for the last 8-10 years, it's been on the increase.
Mm.
Yeah.
Scary.
Well, he did stipulate to my point, and it's not my point. There are large-scale studies that people who are part of religious communities, not these fundamental wacky ones, but basic, you know, people who go to church, they're happier.
Yeah, and then he said he might go out with you, and then you condemned God.
Yeah. Oh, look.
I don't get to talk to you anymore.
There's no doubt. I mean, I've said it many times in my life. I would pay, you know, people do that thing where how much would you pay if you could become invisible or you could fly or you could be 5 inches taller or your biceps could be or your hips could be. You know, people sort of go through that hypothetical all the time.
Yeah.
I would pay the most to have a religion.
Yeah.
But a true belief.
Right.
Right. I know. I think about this all the time. I mean, I pray. I talk to God. I go to temple. I'm part of a religious community. But if you hooked me up to a lie detector.
Yes.
If you hooked me up to a lie detector and asked me if I believed in God, I would fail.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Because you're too strong and intellectual to go for that nonsense.
But I want to.
I want to, too. And I would pay. Look, being invisible would be great for a while. You get to go to the locker room over 24-hour fitness and just camp out in the ladies' side. And then you get to hear what people really thought about you when they didn't know you're in the room. But that stuff would get old after a couple of, well, make it 25 years.
Yeah.
Because there's Bally's, there's a lot of other health clubs I got to get to. And don't get me started on the local high schools. All right, the point is after about 25 to 50 years, 50 to 75 years, I would definitely burn out on that.
Plus, yes. I got to be able to fly because I got to get from one gym to the other.
I'm going to tell you this. You hook up Rabbi Wiener to the lie detector, I think he fails.
Oh, all the Jews would fail. They would. They're too smart a breed.
Nobody really believes
they're really
God.
Too smart a breed for that. But if you would give me something that knew that if one of my kids ever got an illness, I could take comfort in knowing that if something horrible happened to me or somebody else, if I was in a situation, if I found out I had a brain tumor and it's inoperable, that I could, I mean, that thing where I love my kids so much it hurts. And if anything ever happened to one of them, the greatest gift you could ever give me was knowing that we would be reunited one day in a place called heaven. That would be worth millions and millions of dollars to me. That'd be worth, I would give everything away and start over for it. I want it so badly. The problem is just like T's tried to discover over there at Temple every other Saturday. It's just not going
to
work.
It's a comfort to be in a community, but it's very difficult
to
really believe in God.
That I'm pretty damn sure I was married to that woman, and I know her parents, and that's exactly what they believe, and they're unshakable, and he's a nuclear physicist.
God bless them.
Why do, hey, the other thing is why do they talk about it, or why do folks talk about it so much? It'd be nice. Yes.
Proselytizing is not
pretty. Be not like the Pharisee, meaning don't brag about your religion. Keep it to yourself. It's right in the Bible. Keep it to yourself.
We need to take a quick break. When we come back, I think I'd like to keep this topic going and shift gears, but keep it going, which is I was watching one of my heroes, Kevorkian, on
60 Minutes
last night. And, you know, they always call it, you know, he helped people commit suicide. If you break that statement down, you can't really help someone commit suicide. Committing suicide is taking your own life.
Yeah.
If you want to take your own life, you're going to take your own life.
Absolutely.
When you're standing on a ledge, if I push you, I murdered you. If I sit there with my arms folded and you jump, I didn't help you do it. Or even if I yell jump, I didn't help you do it. I don't know that you can help someone commit suicide. I know what they mean when they say it, but I don't think the guy should have spent 8 years in prison for what he did.
There's a Good Samaritan law that says you have to help certain people.
Yeah.
But in my interpretation of Kevorkian, he did.
He was contacted by the people. His family, their families were desperate. These people were shells of their former self and worried that they would choke on their own saliva, could you imagine? And he assisted them. Anyway, the idea that we spent millions of dollars prosecuting this guy and that he spent 8 years. The guy's a doctor, for Christ's sake. I mean, the idea that just a guy with that kind of education should rot in prison throughout his 70s, and we should have to pay for this guy with this much education to rot over there, who does not pose any meaningful threat to society, is ludicrous to this atheist. But I want to hear what you have to say, and we'll break down the game film next on the Adam Carolla Show.
It's the Adam Carolla Show, and now, an editorial from Slippery Slope Guy. Today's topic, physician-assisted suicide.
Should the family of a terminally ill person have the right to take them off life support? Maybe. But it's a slippery slope. One day, you're removing the breathing tube from a brain-dead 9-year-old. Then the next thing you know, your perfectly healthy 13-year-old goes in for his Pop Warner physical, and the doctor snuffs his life out with a pillow, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it.
That was Slippery Slope Guy. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Yeah, I'm an atheist, and my feeling is just who cares? Go do your religion. But it does start to bleed into politics, and then it bleeds into, obviously, if you're living in a country and that country is populated by folks that don't think like you do, then you don't get to do certain things. Maybe it's grow a pot plant in your backyard. Maybe it's pull the plug on the life support. Whatever it is, there's policy that's dictated by a country that is not made up of atheists. I do believe whatever, we always talk about morality when it comes to situations like Kevorkian. No religion means we don't care what Kevorkian does, in my book. I think that's religiously based. The folks that have the biggest problem with what Kevorkian does is not atheists.
Right.
Atheists usually don't, they just want to smoke their weed and have sex.
Right. Christians believe that, and this is weird for me because I really do profess and try to be as Christian as I can. I just suck at it. when I say practicing Christian with my wife, I mean she practices it in everything she does. When I say practice for me, I mean I practice because I suck at it. But I got to back up Kevorkian on this too. And at my church, they'd go crazy with that.
Yeah.
But I got to back Kevorkian on this.
There's millions of people on the planet and hundreds of thousands of them die every week. And this is people that, you know, when you see these folks and their quality of life, and look, it's not really up to you to decide when somebody thinks they want to go. As a matter of fact, you want to talk about selfish. Somebody says, I'm breathing through a tube. I've lost use of my hands and legs. I'm essing on myself as we speak. And I say, I think you can endure another 16 to 21 months of that. You want to talk about selfish? I'm going to decide when you've had enough.
Right.
I'm going to go ahead and leave that up to you.
I agree.
Look, if you're a troubled teen and your girlfriend just dumped you and you're on a bunch of serotonin reuptake inhibitors, I want to get involved with that one. You got your whole life ahead of you.
Yeah.
If you're in your 70s, you're crapping on yourself and you got nothing else to live for and you have a disease where you can't feed yourself, I'm okay with that.
I agree with you, and I think in the basic sense, most of America agrees with you, because I think I mentioned this before, suicide being against the law is almost what's considered a blue law, laws that don't apply anymore, because most suicides jumped during the Depression,
right,
and they kept landing on people, so they made it illegal to kill yourself.
Right.
They didn't make it illegal to jump, they made it illegal to kill yourself.
The idea, you know, for me, I would like this country, sort of this city, your town, whatever, wherever you live, I would like it sort of shaped as a pyramid. And I would say, let's start at the top. Well, at the top, we have murder, we have rape, we have molestation, we have global warming, we have whatever, education. Those are the top pyramids. And then as you start to get down toward the bottom, you have little things about transportation and public housing and stuff. And then when you get to the very bottom, you have Japanese businessmen hooking up with Heidi Fleiss's girls.
Right.
And you have Jack Kevorkian, and you have me with a pot plant in my yard. That's at the very, very, very bottom of my pyramid. My social pyramid, my society pyramid. So when we've gotten all the murdering taken care of and we've gotten all the molestation taken care of and we've cleaned up all the greenhouse producing factories with the ozone killing this and that, and we've patched every pothole, then we can focus on Kevorkian. But we live in a society where Kevorkian shoots right up to the top of the pyramid. We're going to spend, I think they spent $9 million. And that was $9 million of 1994 dollars, right, or 1996 dollars. Michigan, not exactly a place where every kid is getting a world-class education.
Yeah.
They spent $9 million of the taxpayer dollars getting an old doctor,
yeah,
who didn't kill his wife and collect on the insurance. This guy was solicited by people that had advanced stages of Lou Gehrig's disease and wanted to be put out of their misery in a dignified way.
And did what they requested and what he's accused of. Assisted.
Right.
He never killed anyone. He made a device that the patient themselves had to flip.
Right.
They had to flip a switch that would mix the cocktail that would kill them.
That's right. Now let's hear a little 60 Minutes from last night. Please, Bald Brian.
Dr. Death has a new lease on life. Jack Kevorkian, who's now 79 years old, was released from prison this past Friday after more than 8 years behind bars. He'd been convicted of murder for ending the life of a terminally ill man, Tom Yauch, even though Yauch and his family had begged Kevorkian to do it. Back in 1998, Kevorkian gave us a tape he had made of Tom Yauch's final minutes, and we aired part of it on 60 Minutes. Kevorkian wanted to force prosecutors to charge him because he believed that by winning in court, he could make euthanasia legal, that is, death by doctor at the request of a terminally ill patient. But he didn't get the verdict he'd expected. Well, now, as a free man, will Kevorkian continue his crusade?
Yeah. See, the judge sent a very strong message to him, except for, I don't know what the F that message is. That people that are terminally ill, that have lost use of their limbs and lost control of their bowels, can't die in dignity? What is the message that we're sending as a society to Kevorkian? Hey, we'll take our super highly educated, compassionate doctors and lock them up in their 70s? What is that message? Well, I don't know what the goddamn message is.
Well, I'm not. Is your question what's the message, or is the message incorrect? Because I know exactly what the message is.
What's the message?
Obey the law or put you in jail.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, and I agree that is the message.
That is,
and the message.
Message
is
By
incorrect.
The way, is
and the
Mike
message
Wallace,
is incorrect.
Is
exactly right.
Is Mike Wallace still alive?
No, he...
He needs Dr. Death yesterday.
I'm not sure. Please tell me.
It is amazing.
That guy, dude, is old.
I know.
He has cheated death.
Absolutely amazing. Yes. All right. Let's go to the phones. Let's see. Someone's a hospice worker.
Ah.
Tammy?
Hi. My name is Tammy.
All right. And you're a hospice worker?
Well, actually, I'm a registered nurse, and I do hospice nursing.
Mm-hmm. And you used to be a male?
No.
All right. Okay.
I've heard that in every drive-thru that I go through, though.
Sir, would you like fries with that?
Wow.
So smoking's bad for you.
All right.
Honestly, Tammy, what you do is one of the most incredibly difficult jobs because all of the patients with whom you work are critically ill, right?
They're called terminally ill to qualify.
Terminally, thank you.
Terminally ill.
So they're on the way out, and they're probably suffering.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what is your opinion from someone who's been on the front lines?
Well, my opinion is I think that everyone has the right to make the decision as far as terminating their own life if they have a terminal illness.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you in that my personal belief is quality of life. And so in watching people, you know, suffer, it's I think that people that are saying that people don't have that right, they haven't truly watched someone suffer horribly as I have.
Right. Tammy, here's my assertion. Life can mean many different things to many different people. You could be Donald Trump's little kid, Barron, and you could be suckling on Melania's ample bosom and growing up in a, you know, penthouse in New York and having your, you know, being the toast of the town, or you could be some refugee from Darfur.
Yeah.
I don't want the refugee's life. I would rather not be born than be born into a life of misery.
Me too, absolutely.
I would rather, look, if somebody said either your child can be born into your life and enjoy all the fruits of your labors, or they can be born and live in a cage. You would say, well, I'm not going to have that kid born. These people aren't pulling a kite on the beach. They're not falling in love. They're not getting laid. They're not taking a Eurail pass through Prague and Europe and discovering all the sights. They're confined to a wheelchair and they cannot wipe their own ass. You see, they have no quality of life. We just go life. Well, it's not just life. It's our life, living here, having a great free life, and then their lives that, quite frankly, I would rather not be born than be born into some of the societies that are out there and some of the lives that are out
there. Are there some, besides maybe hardcore religious zealots, that disagree with you?
I really don't know.
Because as I say, I go to a church every Sunday that says you can't do this.
Right.
My wife goes to a church every Sunday says you can't do this, and she's like good at it. And I don't think either one of us disagree with you. So I'm wondering where the people are that say, Adam, you're out of your mind. You should not, and I don't care if you're 70 years old and you can't wipe yourself and you're breathing
right
out of a tube.
First.
You have, there's a right to life. But see, I hate the expression right to life or pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
Because what does that make me then? Pro-death? No, mm-hmm. I'm pro-choice.
Pro-choice.
I hate that expression.
Right.
Hey, Tammy?
My understanding, though, that, mm-hmm. and I'm not Catholic, but it's my understanding that part of Catholicism is opposed to ending your own life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
like
sure. It's a mortal sin, you go right to hell. It's one of the big ones.
Tammy?
Right.
How about you pull a little Patch Adams this morning? How about you get yourself...
Smoking sucks.
How about you get yourself big nose, big clown shoes, and go cheer up everyone over at the hospice?
I try to do that, either with the nose or with morphine. So.
Well, speaking
of... what I'm picking.
Can I ask a Smokey, Tammy, a question? Yeah. Tammy, now I know you can't admit this because it's illegal, but I've got a hunch that a lot of hospice workers, when asked, will give a patient a little extra morphine that might help them shuffle off their mortal coils. Am I right?
Well, the medication decreases their anxiety.
Mm-hmm. I'm saying you help people.
Little mercy killing we're talking about.
Well, as a registered nurse, I have to follow physician orders.
Yeah, you and I know that.
Then what's the duct tape for, bitch?
I think a lot of people, who else does the patient have? They just have their nurse.
That's right.
And they're begging you. They're looking in your eyes and saying, please, help me out.
I agree. I would do the same. And again, we were talking about religion and then spilling into this Kevorkian thing. I really do think it's the same mind, the one that says, life is so precious. I've created a fantasy scenario where I'm going to be with my family after I pass on. We go so, we can't see. Here's the thing. When people die, it reminds us that we're going to die and it drives us nuts. And so we fight tooth and nail for terminally ill people to go on, even though, first off, none of our business. My God, none of your business.
Yeah.
This person has decided, this person with their family has decided, I think one of the most personal decisions you can make, ultimately the last decision and the most sort of ultimate decision a person can make is, I've had enough. I'm leaving this planet. And you want to stick your beak into that drink? I mean, isn't that their decision, especially with their family? All right, let's see.
What if they're wrong? What if they're not
that
sick?
That was the whole Terry Schiavo thing. Like, what if she comes back to life?
No, what if you're not sick?
Well, obviously...
That's a slippery slope thing.
Kevorkian is not going to go over there.
Right, but we're not talking about Kevorkian. We're talking about your right to end your own...
We're talking about
terminally ill. I didn't know that we were doing that. I thought we were talking about your right to end your life.
Well, it's both. Obviously, if you're perfectly healthy and you want to end your life, I'm open to that, too.
I'm open to that, too. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm certainly not open to 15-year-olds doing it. I am open to you being an adult in wanting to end your life for one reason or another. I would assume that some help could, you know, if somebody intervened and got you some counseling, some medication, got you, took you to the bunny ranch or what have you, I think I could turn you around. If you'd been at the Key Club for the Ducci's bachelor party on Thursday night, I believe we could have turned you around. But my point is even that I'm okay with.
I'm open to it, but I was wondering your opinion on it because I think at the beginning of losing my wife, had I had the huevos to do it, I might have considered killing myself.
Interesting.
I certainly didn't. I ended up at the Key Club with some hot chick and a vibrating duck.
That's right.
Well, yes.
But, I mean, where do you draw the line? Can you kill yourself over sadness?
Well, here's the thing. Sadness passes, which is why you shouldn't kill yourself. But a terminal illness does not pass.
Okay, but that's what I want to know. Are we discussing your right to die because you're sick?
We're talking Kevorkian specifically.
Okay. Fine, then I'm with you at 100%.
Melinda?
Yes?
You have a thought on this topic?
Yes, I just don't understand why a woman has the right to choose to abort a child, but a full-grown person, adult, doesn't have the right to terminate their own life.
It is an interesting comment to make in the society where we fight very hard for this and then fight very hard. I would think it would be the other way around.
Are you pro-choice?
I'm sorry.
No, I'm not.
But I also think on that, if you hit a car, you're driving and you run to another car and there's a woman who's 8 months pregnant, you get charged on a double manslaughter count.
Mm-hmm.
But not, and as far as an abortion...
Right.
I don't know. It just doesn't add up.
No, I know what you're saying. I think it's a greater crime. I mean, and I think all right-thinking people would realize that sucking out a viable fetus that was going to go on to become a human being is a much greater sin, if you will, than a 75-year-old guy whose life is over, essentially, has lost use of his limbs, using a breathing apparatus, dying. I mean, to me, that's just a greater loss. I'm an atheist, but it's a greater loss, the fetus, than it is the old guy who's dead anyway.
Right. Unless, of course, it's the spawn of Ted Bundy and the woman that would marry him.
Well, that's a good point.
And the gene, and if you sucked that out,
either way,
all the misery, you could save the world over the next 70 years.
Well, maybe we'll do, I got some more Kevorkian for you, but we're running horribly late, and this is bringing me down anyway. I want to talk Music Monday.
Oh, good. Something happened.
Let's pep it up a little. Summer songs, everybody. It's Music Monday. Best and worst songs. You're barbecuing. The clouds have parted. The sun is shining through. You're in your trunks or your pirate underpants, depending on who I'm speaking to.
Right.
You're going to hit the pool. You're going to hit the beach. What song do you want playing and what song don't you want playing for that activity? We'll do that next on Music Monday.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Teresa Strasser, and Danny Bonaducci, where it's Music Monday. Time to tally up the best and the worst summer songs of all time. Call 866-901-ADAM. Back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, again, the criteria. It's summer. It's hot. You're barbecuing. Cracking a cold one. Hitting the pool. Hitting the beach. Having a good time. And the song... You want, because it's important. It's important in part of the experience.
Yeah,
aren't you want blaring from the boombox when you're at the beach and you're playing a little volleyball out in the sun? The best and the worst, let's start with good.
Yeah.
I think I've played this one once before. Friends of Distinction.
Is that this? I love this song.
Number three in 1969. This is one of the songs whenever I go on a road trip with my wife and something like this will hop on the radio. I will just turn from the driver's side of the car and I will look at her and I go, I will give you $10,000 if you tell me the name of this band.
I hate you.
I know. It's a horrible thing to do. But she always buys into it. She should yell, I want a divorce and I'm going to get a hell of a lot more than 10 grand. But she always plays along and she starts thinking. And I know exactly everything she knows.
That's my point. Give her one chance.
Oh, no. I'll tell her I'll give her 10 on this one because no one knows this is the Friends of Distinction.
Oh, my God. I spent the weekend. The girl I was telling you about that did stuff with vibrating rubber ducks plays that game constantly.
Asking
she plays constantly because we drove to San Diego and back, and she said one of the first things to make small talk is that she likes this game, who can name who sings the song first. Mm-hmm. And then never stopped. For 6 hours in cars.
Even Come On Get Happy?
Whatever the hell it was. And I mean, you'd hear ding and she'd name it immediately. Or she'd know you would know and stare at you like you were an idiot for half the song.
Well, that is
so I'm leaving both of you.
That is the good summer song. Yeah, I mean, you could play a little volleyball, throw a horseshoe to that baby. But bad song. Simon and Garfunkel. You forget about the original version. That's got a good beat to it. It's just on the nose. It's the hazy shade of winter, that's all.
Who does the cover that we're used to hearing?
Bangles.
Right.
Yeah. Although I would have never thought that. I've always thought something about Michael.
Got brown leaves. It's a weird song because it's got the... He's got an upbeat tempo, but he's singing about leaves turning brown and snow falling, so I've decided that would be a bummer for the summer.
I agree.
All right, let's go to another one of my personal favorites on the good side. I just love this song. Now, this is, of course, The Who's I Can See for Miles, but it's done by Lord Sitar.
Wow. You dug deep on this.
This guy rocks a sitar.
What was the guy at Woodstock that played the sitar?
Robbie Shankar.
Yeah. Do you know he was the only person at Woodstock paid?
Oh, really? Smart.
Only guy to get a buck.
All right, everyone dig this. Got the blender going. You do that move where you dump in a little extra rum.
Yeah, I'd like him to cover some contemporary songs like Hot in Hair.
He's it's getting hot in here.
I think it'd be a good sitar version.
I just love this version of this song.
It's very festive.
It's also, this is Jimmy Kimmel's least favorite song.
Why does he hate it?
I think he hates it because I love it.
Not because it's a sitar. Maybe that has something to do with it.
And it just reminds me of, like, I don't know, Austin Powers and go-go dancers and bikinis.
It does conjure up the Beatles, you know?
Yeah, except for this song is, like, 6 years old.
Right.
I mean, the cover of it. All right, Lord Sitar, everybody. I can see for miles. All right, let's go to the bad quickly. This is a horrible summer song.
Cherokee.
This is Paul Revere and the Raiders.
I love these guys. I think that these guys may be directly responsible for the way I dress.
It's funny, in the 60s, they're all wearing, British soldier outfits and singing about feeling glad all over, trying to rip the Beatles off. And then somewhere in the 70s, they start talking about the Cherokee people.
Yeah,
a song about the genocide of our indigenous peoples is not fun.
Here's here's how horrible this society is. This song was number one.
This song it was a great song. I unfortunately asked Cher if she was very proud of this song. And she said, why? You're thinking Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves. And I went, oh, yeah, that's right.
Listen, oh, no, listen. Everyone cranked out a good Indian song in the 70s. Here's what makes it a bummer for the barbecue is this next line. But don't worry, the Cherokee people will rise again, as you learn in about 5 minutes of this song. Although, the song's 37 years old. I'm not sure if they're making a comeback.
Oh, I dropped about $8,000 at Pechanga the other day. I think they're doing all right.
Huh. What the hell? Where's this band from? Indiana or something? What the hell do they... Well, Indiana, actually. Uh-oh, here's the ending. Everyone was as high as a kite in the 70s.
Yeah.
Cherokee people. All right, we need to take our, self a break. Hey, Paul V and the Raiders, Cherokee people, Cherokee tribe. We'll take a break. 722-22 at 7 o'clock. 38 away from top of the hour. Teresa Strasser, Danny Bonaducci, they got their number one and number two.
By the way, in case you're confused, it's 8:30.
No, that's right. That's right. I told Jack Silver I'd give the timeout, but it would never be the right time. Right. So just forget it.
That's 22 minutes before 9
right.
o'clock.
Oh, same with the weather.
Irony. 800 degrees outside.
It's minus 41 in Burbank right now. All right. We'll take a break. We'll be back with mine and T's and all our number ones, goods and bads. Summer songs next on the Adam Carolla Show.
Music Monday on the Adam Carolla Show, the best and the worst summer songs. Chime in with yours at 866-901-ADAM. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, it's Music Monday, and we try to keep a little theme going. It's heading into summer, getting out of May into June. People are going to start barbecuing and hitting the pools and the beach. What do you want to hear? It's a very important part, actually, if you're throwing a barbecue or if you're playing a little volleyball at the beach, the music.
Yeah.
Very important. So, what's good? What's bad? T.
Yes.
What
well,
do you got in the good department?
I don't live near the beach, Adam.
That's
I
right.
live near South Central, neighborhood mm-hmm. called South Central in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I like this song about a good day being one where you don't get jacked.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to use your AK.
Ice Cube, right?
Ice Cube. It was a good day.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
It's a great
melt.
Song.
Yeah.
It's got kind of a boppy, happy feel to it.
Yeah, and it's funny, it's not a white guy beach song, but it's more, well, when you see the cutoffs that are down below the knee and you smell the chicken on the barbecue. It's got a little inner city barbecue going,
yeah.
But it's definitely summer.
You know, it's funny. There's the only brother I know that can rap like a white guy rapping like a brother rapping is about summertime. It's Fresh Prince with Summertime, which I picked, and then everyone I know talked me out of.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they said, don't pick that. That's in the summertime.
Yeah.
He's barbecuing out of that park in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
But this song, this is it.
This is it.
If you have to pick a rap tune, this is it, T.
Well, give me the bad now.
But I was so happy listening to that. What's this?
This is summer.
Ah, summertime. But you were talked out of this.
I was talked out of this.
All right.
I wish someone could talk Paul Bryan out of it.
Paul Bryan, let's get to my bad song for obvious reasons.
He's too good for his own good. We have guests now that come on the show and go, how do you do that in the middle of the show? How's he doing that?
I do not want this to be the song of my summer.
Roy Orbison.
God, you're fast. I was all
right. Can you name this tune?
Oh, yes. I could smile
for a while. Turn it off.
Last night.
Yeah, I have a weird music thing that I don't own this song. I don't have any Roy Orbison. All the songs that I get, I know it sounds like I'm bragging, I don't have.
Right.
I just recognize the first beats, and it makes me recognize the song just because I've heard it on the radio enough. This is a great song. Yes, this is it. This is, you can hear the tears going into the barbecue and making the...
I know, were you actually cooking tea when you did this?
cooking up ways to kill myself.
I wanted to know it was both you and I was talking about when I did the sadness department.
Yeah.
I'm going to heal.
Solid, baby.
Thank you. Great effort.
Danny.
Let's start
with the good.
You can't go wrong. And it's a great place for summer, too. It's a great city, and it's a great song.
Chicago, Saturday in the Park.
Great summer song.
Yeah. Chicago, certainly their earlier stuff was awesome. And, this is just a happy summertime. People are running barefoot on grass.
It's Saturday. You're in the park. You think it was the 4th of July. What says something like that?
Yeah. Very solid effort.
Except every song with the word summer in it that came into my mind first, which drove me insane.
Great song in a right on the nose. What do you got in the bad department for us, Deutch?
Now, interesting enough, bad, and it does have summer in the title. It is Boys of Summer.
Ooh,
Don Henley.
Yeah.
I thought this might have a personal jab as well as Sucking Hall on its own without your help.
Yeah,
but I thought you'd particularly dislike this with me.
I hate this song. It's the part where he says he saw a deadhead sticker on a Cadillac, and he said, "Don't look back, you never look back." I don't know why it bothers me so much. The Eagles collectively had a lot of annoying songs. But when they broke up, they even got more annoying.
Because
they're like, hey, if we spread out, we can do more damage.
Remember, it was like Bobby.
Scatter.
They became collectively, they're a rock and roll band and a pretty good one.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Individually, they became that guy, Bobby Goldsboro, and all wanted to tell these long songs about their ponies.
Yeah, you know what I mean? There must have been a secret meeting. Perhaps in one of the Eagle band members' homes in Malibu in like 1979, where they were like, listen, everybody, we're annoying the bejesus out of Corolla with our crappy songs now, but there's only so much we can do as a band. If all five of us just spread out and head different directions, I think we can drive him to suicide.
And do theme songs. They all have a theme from beginning, middle, to end.
I hate this song.
Because Heart of the Matter is a great song.
I do like that song. I must admit. All right, takes a big man to admit when he's wrong. And going to my number two good song, this is how good and how big a man I am. This is Hotel California. It's not by the Eagles. It's the Gypsy Kings.
Not the Gypsy Kings.
And I was watching Entourage last night, and they ended it with this. And I thought, you know, I hate a lot of Eagles songs, mostly because they're effed out.
Yeah.
This isn't a bad song. It's just I've heard Hotel California one too many times. But this I haven't heard one too many times. And I thought, I could be holding a beer and some flip-flops, manning a barbecue to this.
It's good.
Yeah, they're...
If you do one of those things watching your CD player right now, Gypsy Kings. I'm a big fan. Never heard this.
This has a good hip factor, too, because the Eagles are not hip, but this version is.
Yeah, and not a big fan of the ranchero-style music, but it is good to be boozing in the sun by.
Well, yeah.
Definitely. It's like, I don't like reggae. I wouldn't sit around and listen to reggae. But on the other hand, if you're walking around the pool, it's pretty good music. All right, let me give my number two in the band department. Wow, it's really, really, really turned into Eagles Fun Fest here. This is all coincidence, by the way.
We never talk about these.
Right. This is Glenn Frey again doing more damage on his own. It's on the street. A lot of singing about the street, the 80s. Going out on the street, the heat's on the street. Can't take the heat on the street.
I always enjoyed the expression, the word on the street.
Yeah,
I've word been on the street. There was no word except maybe you should probably get off the street.
I always wondered how that worked, too, when, like, Rick Springfield learned that the word on the street is that you've been talking to other boys. It's like, huh? What street's he on?
Easy Street.
Whoa. Two in 1985. How much coke were we doing, everybody? All right. It's on the street. T, You're number one in the good and bad department.
You're never going to believe this because, as you just said, we don't show each other our songs.
We have no idea.
Which often makes it difficult to play because we can come in here and all of them pick the same song.
Well, somebody, usually Mike, who knows what the picks are, will say if we all pick the same song, somebody should change their song. But other than that, we have no idea.
Maybe we should admit that we're accidentally doing bad radio.
Maybe that's it.
Well, I like this song because I think summer is about escaping school, work, a man who doesn't love you.
Oh, already gone by the Eagles.
This is a really good summer song.
It is a good song.
For you, and she has a vibrating duck.
Send her my way.
It's
I never
pull the cigar out of its mouth and send her my way.
I never go on a road trip without this song.
Yep. Oh, wait a minute. Def Rec guy says Bonaducci.
That's another reason I picked it. Here it comes.
All right.
There carrying that guy out of the ring covered in a hospital stretcher. I said, hey, I put you on the show. That's how I talk.
So it's all Eagles and not playing.
Yeah.
All right, I like this song.
Okay, good.
What can I say? Give us the bad, though.
Okay, Keith. I'm going to warn you. What you're about to hear is one of the most hideous things that's ever been recorded. You know the Baha Men?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
They did that. Who let the dogs out?
Woof, woof. I'm
that sounded like Tequila Sunrise to me.
That was Brian making a rare misstep from Brian. The Baha Men recorded Who Let the Dogs Out.
My head almost exploded, by the way, because my right ear heard you saying Baha Men, and my left ear heard three strums of a guitar that screamed Tequila Sunrise. So I had no idea what to think.
Well, let me tell you this. Who Let the Dogs Out is their best song. Now imagine.
Oh, really?
Their worst song.
Oh, boy.
It's a remake of a song I already hated.
Oh, the Beach Boys.
Nicely done, T.
This is an atrocity.
Wow.
I'm sorry I'm even doing this to you.
Where do you even find this? Off the
Florida Keys. Yeah. I spent hours.
I had problems with it. Where did you find this? I ran into all sorts of trouble.
This is kind of a hate crime to the audience. You wanna go to I can't believe how awful. Well, because I was thinking, I've always hated the song Kokomo, but I can't choose it because at least the harmonies are beautiful and it's well done. This, you can hate.
Yeah.
No, I can hate Kokomo by the Beach Boys.
I looked up covers of Kokomo, and this was the worst one I could possibly. I can't even imagine.
Baby, we got to find you a date.
Seriously.
You're spending your weekend looking up covers of Kokomo. You and your cat just Googling Kokomo covers.
Oh, no, Adam. Two cats and a five-week-old stray I just took in.
Perfect. All right. Great selection. Horrible song. Danny, good and bad summer songs. Number one.
Okay, good. I hope everybody agrees with me because you're going to have a real strong opinion on this one. You got to get Corolla.
Summertime Boys. One to the ladies.
Diamond Dave.
Diamond Dave,
It's Van Halen with Ice Cream Man.
Right, I'll be your Ice Cream Man, right. Keep you cool.
Better look out now, though. Dave's got something for you.
He rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, but he gets to rub you. Stop me when I'm passing by. This is when Dave was so cool. I'm your
Ice Cream Man. Yeah, I kind of love to hate the guy, too, but I just can't. See, now all my flavors
are guaranteed to satisfy. His voice sounds nice.
A decade later, I punched him in the face at the Rainbow. Dixie Cups.
All flavors and push-ups too. Come on, Ice Cream Man. All right, good. Good choice.
It was hard to pick because I actually hate this guy. Damn it. He's a punk-ass bitch.
Well, there's a...
there's a great song.
Quite a theme because I hate the Eagles and I'm picking a lot of Eagles stuff today. All right, give us the bad.
The bad is pretty easy. And it's Power Station 85.
Some like it hot. Yeah. This is a horrible song for me.
It's a horrible, horrible 80s thing.
Feel the heat.
On the street?
On the street, with the word.
A lot of turning the heat up, too. A lot of turning up the heat and heat on the street.
Yeah. Oh, it's burning you off. Plus, it was such a great movie to name this horrible song out there.
Yeah.
That's my number one bad song.
Good choice. All right, quickly. Bald Brian. I'm doing my number one song. This is in the good department. One we've played before. I believe Danny chose this one. First Class, number four, 1974. An epic.
I do like this song.
Beach, baby, there is a sand from July to the end of September.
Although sex on sand, just like sex in water, highly overrated.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't know, but all right.
For opposite reasons.
I never thought that it would end.
Everyone thinks this is the Beach Boys, I think.
Who is it?
First Class.
Which these guys could never afford to fly, by the way.
More.
Well, how do they get to the Red Roof Inn for their gig?
Ask Adam Zad, he owns the place.
Just dig the horns in the harmony. All right, I could listen to it all morning long, but let's go to my number one in the bad department, a very good song, but very bad for summer. Jim Morrison was dead when this song got to number 14 on the charts in 1971.
The end?
It's coming. The rain may help.
Riders on the Storm?
There you go. Now, the thing that's a bummer about this song is not only is it raining in the background and talking about people dying in the desert, but the guy who sung it never heard it.
Released posthumously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was dead already.
I don't think he heard some of the stuff he sang when he was alive.
Decent point.
Yeah. It was been ringing in his ears.
Great song, but... This is played at the barbecue. It's time to wrap it up.
Yeah.
When he named himself the Lizard King, he was actually saying, "I miss Bing." It was about a Bing Crosby reference. He just can't hear himself.
All right. Let's quickly. There's a killer on the road. All right.
Drunk driver.
Let's,
oh, my God. I'm going to kill myself.
Let's see what we got here. Jesus. We're so late. You want to go to line three? Ryan. Ken?
Yeah.
Ken from San Dimas. What do you got, Ken?
A classic. Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys.
Yeah. That is a that's a winner any time of the year, but especially during the summer.
Just makes you think of the sun and the beach.
It's a weird thing that a band just name themselves after a certain terrain, and every song they sung was pretty much just about going down to that place and hanging out.
Yeah, because there's other bands that have tried it. I remember a gray rock band called Mountain.
Yeah.
But all their songs weren't about going to a mountain.
Yeah.
Tundra never really hit.
No. Frozen Tundra wasn't good. Fjord sucked pretty bad.
Yeah, Fjord sucked bad.
Meyer. It's all good names for bands.
Europe was actually a pretty good hair band.
All right, and let's see. Let's talk to Tyson on line five. This is a song I personally hate, but...
Oh, no.
Dude, it's Beavis.
Tyson?
Hey, this song, in my area, we have our barbecues right near the river, so this song always reminds me of sitting around the river, barbecuing it up. Mm-hmm. It's perfect for it. We got Bob Marley's jamming.
All right.
It's one of the greatest songs of all time.
It is. I hate reggae music. I think people like it because they're scared.
Bob Marley, though, man.
Nah, it's like.
I want to hear this theory on reggae. It's probably my favorite jamming? Brand.
Well, first off, he says jamming 750.
Yeah, he does.
But that just makes you want to sit around the water with all your friends.
It makes you just want to get drunk and bake out in the sun. I'll give it that. But it's not good for doing anything else.
Yeah, it is. Outdoor sex.
Outdoor sex
in a hammock.
Can you do that?
Yeah.
I can barely be. I can't even masturbate in a hammock without falling off. I can't remember someone else being in there. God knows I've tried. I did that thing where I spun around like Homer Simpson. Got all tangled up. It's humiliating. They had to cut me out of there.
One of the four businesses I've owned in a row that failed. All my outside shots have failed. I owned a hotel in St. Lucia.
This guy's the greatest stoner laugh ever. You haven't mentioned it once.
I know. I thought and it was you dropping Spicoli in. Hold on. Tyson?
Yeah.
How much weed do you smoke a day?
Oh, tons.
And do you worship at the altar of Bob Marley?
I don't know if there's an altar, but if there was, I probably would.
What if there was a singer named Bong Marley? Would you feel like you just died and went to heaven? Like, if you met a guy named Bong Marley, would that just be it for you? Like, do you feel like you just ascend up into up into pot heaven at that point? Yeah, this guy smokes copious amounts of weed. I thought his first laugh was just you dropping Spicoli in there.
No.
Tyson, are you employable? Where do you work?
Where do I work?
Uh-oh.
For the gas company.
Really? Hmm. So you're employable.
And
does everyone know what a crazy stoner you are?
Yeah. No, I had to quit. I definitely had to quit, but I did.
Your job or pot?
Had my fun time.
Oh, you start being tested at work?
No, I had to quit to get the job. And
right.
Yeah,
okay.
So I'm clean now.
All right. All right.
I had my young time.
Tell that to your laugh. All right, Tyson. Dawson says he'll see you at the Avocado Festival this year, right?
My laugh, Adam.
All right, buddy. Let's go out on a high note.
There's some Rasta who can't sing at all. That just changed his name to Bong Marley and is going to make a fortune.
Oh, that'd be a great name for
that guy.
Bong Marley cover band.
You know, like Dred Zeppelin? They don't really have to do anything. I'll just go see them.
Bong Marley.
Bong Marley.
All right, we need to take ourselves a break. T.
Yes.
The news, what's coming up in it?
If you didn't hear Jack Nicholson's acceptance speech last night at the MTV Movie Awards, you need to.
All right, we'll hear that next and more news on The Adam Carolla Show.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show. And now, Adam explains to 1780s guy, Paris Hilton.
But surely she understands that disgracing the family name is not hot.
That was Adam Explains Paris Hilton to 1780s guy. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Really? How fast would you fall on a sword if you were her dad?
That's hot.
Yes. All right, T.
Yes.
What's going on in the news, baby doll?
Teresa Strasser, the number one Jewish news reporter on this station right now.
Well, Paris Hilton's father did not show up, but her mother and sister were in tow last night around 10:30 when she turned herself in to serve her 23 days in Lynwood jail.
Mm.
Now, before going to jail, she stopped by the MTV Movie Awards.
Ballsy move, kind of, really.
And she was asked how she
felt. Well, you had to have thought about the repercussions. Are they going to be nicer to me or meaner to me?
Ballsy move for right-thinking people, but for media whores.
You think she just went to it?
Shrewd move.
Think
Well, you don't have to leave your house if you don't want to.
Right.
She drove herself to the music awards.
And you'll think kind of like, I'm going to be embarrassed, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that.
I just they're going to say the name Paris Hilton. There's always the chance it could hurt a little. But my name will be said.
Yes, and she was asked on the red carpet about her impending jail term, and here's what she had to say.
I'm doing okay. I'm obviously a little scared right now. I'm scared, but I'm being strong, and I'm ready to face my sentence, and I hope that this can be an example to other young people and the decisions they make and use it as something positive.
That's right. Turn it into something positive.
Now, I've read on several websites that she had a hair and makeup team scheduled to show up at her house before she was going to go to jail because obviously she wanted to look good in her mugshot, which has been released. And she does look pretty good, although she does have kind of one expression.
Yes. I have no idea what the F is going on expression.
Yeah.
It's you, a dog has caught you masturbating. Whatever that look is. Whatever the look your dog
I can help
has.
You around that problem.
Oh, really?
Just invite the dog, and then it will never catch you again.
Include the dog?
Include the dog.
Smart.
Because it will never catch you again.
That look. Yeah. Ooh. Ooh. My owner hurt. Should I call 911 with my paws?
Just get rid of that. Just call the dog right in.
Also at the MTV Movie Awards, Jack Nicholson accepted award. He won for Best Villain for his work in The Departed. His speech, I don't know. I'm not sure if he'd been cocktailing. I'm going to not judge, but I'll let you judge.
He's loaded at the Oscars and the Golden Globes. Imagine how much he drinks on a throwaway show like this.
Yeah.
Let's take a listen.
I don't give a f***. That's how a villain feels about. But, sir, I appreciate it. I love you, too. Not the way I watch. You know, I'm glad they left it. Because I got in a lot of trouble in my youth watching the dancers on TV. So I wasn't sure about this show today. Movie Awards tipped me off, but I love this part of it because I like the way it looks.
Yeah. You are an alcoholic.
Dude. You know that one thing, though?
Mm.
As creepy as he can get and as drunk as he can get, he's always Jack.
Yeah.
It's like the first time he's ever sounded like an old guy to me.
Yeah, he's starting to sound.
He sounds old and wheezy and creepy and lost.
Yeah.
Drunk. I'm drunk.
Well, host Sarah Silverman actually had a very funny line.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a wheeze and cough real quick.
Here he is, Sarah Silverman on Jack Nicholson.
Oh, my God. This is weird. Jack Nicholson. You don't understand. No, I... I am not kidding. You have literally been in every single one of my favorite actresses.
I love that line. Yeah, Sarah did a great job. Any cooler female comedian on the planet at this time?
By the way, we'll be seeing Sarah Silverman tonight at the premiere, at the screening, I should say,
right,
of The Hammer, your movie.
Such a sweetheart she is.
I think that's all we have time for, if I'm not mistaken. We got time for one more?
One more.
Oh, this is the worst story involving a plunger that you will ever hear in your life. And I am not hyperbolating. If that's a word.
I am primed, baby.
Okay. That's not a word. I'm not exaggerating. Last week, a 79-year-old man in Switzerland was about to take a bath. He couldn't find the rubber stopper that you use to plug the drain, so he got resourceful. And he thought, I'm going to use this toilet plunger and put it over the drain.
All right.
That worked well.
Sure.
All was well. He began his bath. Then he stood up to wash his shoulders. But he slipped and fell. You can see where this is going.
Yes.
He fell backwards onto the stick from the plunger. His wife heard him screaming. She ran in. The plunger was wedged so far up this Swiss man.
Hold on.
Up his Alps.
Bill, pull your pants back up. Please. This is no, first off, it's inappropriate at any time of the morning show, but especially now when a Swedish man was injured to this degree.
I'm thinking Alps, he's thinking Himalayan. That's just none of it's good.
The wife could not help him get the plunger out, so an ambulance
arrived. Hold on a second. First off, I am going to officially deputize everyone within the sound of my voice to remove the plunger that is half in my arse. You understand? You can all help. Normally, get away from me. Don't help. I'm fine. I'm good without you. But when I'm in that prone position and the plunger is halfway up me, go ahead and take it out. You guys are going to need to be like King Arthur, and my ass will be Excalibur.
I'll be right there.
You understand? And here's the proper way to do it, by the way.
If you remove it,
because this could come out. Yes. Right. Plant one foot on the ground firmly. Put the other ball of the other foot on my right arse cheek.
Right.
Grab said plunger. And as you attempt to remove the sword from the rock, you push as hard as you can with that right foot like you're stomping on the brakes of an old Cadillac.
And if I may add, I'm going to deputize you to believe it was accidental. Because according to the people at the ER who do this all the time,
yes,
where people got stuff in their keisters,
right,
it's never accidental.
Well,
bowling pins and gerbils,
right,
perhaps. But this sounds fairly viable to me.
Going with it.
I'm
going to
tell you how this story ended.
And by the way, we'll not judge. When you find the plunger in me, let's not discuss how it got there.
Right.
Let's not discuss what went on before our encounter.
Sure.
Let's remove the plunger, and then it's the time for talk.
I got the music in me. That's cool. I got the plunger in me. Get it out.
Not great. Right.
This man had the plunger in him.
Mm-hmm.
His wife couldn't get it out, and according to a spokesman from the hospital, there was a lot of blood.
How can you not get that out, though?
Hold on. It gets so unbelievably worse.
All right.
He's rushed to the hospital.
This is great.
Mm-hmm.
Guess how long they had to operate to get it out. 8 hours. But he's fine. They fixed everything up there. Internal organs are intact. It'll take a few weeks to recover. He'll be okay. But according to some Swiss reporters, he almost died.
You know, the first, another thing you got to do, by the way, and this is for everyone I've deputized, to remove the plunger from me if they ever catch me in that position. We need to get on the right page when later on people are asking why I'm walking with a limp or holding my side. You see, what they don't want is the couple to go to a cocktail party a week later and say, Jesus, Bob, why are you using a cane? And at the same time, he says fell off a ladder. His wife says skiing accident.
Right.
Yeah. That's what you don't. Just we'll get on the same page.
Right.
We'll swing by the ATM. We'll give you a little hush money and we'll work it all out. But you're all officially deputized.
Well, be aware. If you see Adam with a plunger,
it is ours.
In ours, you may pull it out. I'm Teresa Strasser, and that's the news.
Teresa Strasser with the real news. You, CNN.
All right, we're going to take ourselves a break. Ozzy, the great Oswaldo's here for a movie that was number 2, I believe.
Yep, Knocked Up.
Knocked Up. People are raving about this film. We'll hear what Ozzy has to say next on the Adam Carolla Show.
It's time to play Guess the Movie Quote with our Nicaraguan movie reviewer, Oswaldo Castillo. Can you guess which movie this famous line is from?
Comiao, wherever you are.
If you said Cape Fear.
Come out, wherever you are.
You're correct. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
What's happening, Oz, man?
Good morning, man.
Ray. Good. Ray's not here this morning. He's working on my house.
Ray was at the fight.
I prioritized.
Ray was at the fight?
Mm-hmm. Ray went to San Diego?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He's our biggest fan.
He's like the nicest guy in the whole wide world.
I had to talk to him about that after I'm done yelling at him about whatever he's doing at my house.
Is it ever that time I turn around, like when I'm doing something really cool for me that makes me feel good, all of a sudden I'll see Ray. He's like becoming my best buddy.
Oh, boy. Enjoy. Oz.
Yep, I'm here.
You saw what movie?
Knockout.
Who?
Knockout.
Knockout.
Who's there? Yeah.
Knocked up. Who's there? Guy can't speak English.
I try.
I
try.
I don't know. All right. Knocked up.
Story.
All right, let's hear our official opening.
Oswaldo.
All right, we get it. I'm sorry, we're running late for... Ooh, I hit myself in the mic. We're running late. Late in time, yeah, go ahead.
I am reviewing today is Knockout.
Knockout.
Knockout star Seth Rogen is Ben Stone.
Mm-hmm.
Katherine Heigl is Allison Scott.
That's pretty good. Allison Scott, yeah.
Paul Rudd is Pete. And Leslie Mann is Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
Knockout is a comedy film that is similar to real life.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the irresponsibility and vice versa, the one celebration night and the consequences, a bad application to one prophylactic.
Mm-hmm. Prophylactic, condom. The condom, right? Yeah. Vice versa. I like that one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then the decision over one new life in the war has to be made.
Right. The war is the world, by the way, right?
Yeah.
World.
World.
I know you feel like you don't need to end words, like you go, when you're saying Adam, or you're saying, you know, war instead of world, but you gotta get that last couple letters in
it. Language problem.
Okay. Give me an Adam.
Is that what this is?
Give me a good, clean Adam. All right.
I don't think I'm quite familiar with that phrase.
I'd respond to that.
Her Ben is talking to Allison about her decision. Audio, Brian, please.
Yes. I know we didn't plan this, and, you know, neither of us really thought it was going to happen, but life is like that. You know, you can't plan for it, and even if we did plan, life doesn't care about your plans necessarily, and you just kind of have to go with the flow. And
you know, I know my job is to just support you in whatever it is you want to do, and I'm in, you know, so... Whatever you want to do, I'm going to do. You know, I'm on board.
Yeah, that was weird, but, you
know. I
know
what it is.
What?
He's talking on the phone. And the cut is of him talking in his house, and then the other cut is someone listening.
It's Kevin Heigl listening.
Well, you know more. We have so many audio F-ups on this show, I just assumed that was us. Sorry, Brian. But you're a mess. you know, this guy, Seth Rogen, is one of these guys where... And tell me if you guys secretly do this. You go like, hey, he's 24. This guy's a producer. And you're like, hey, good for him. He's an actor. Hey, man, good. He's a writer. Yeah. He's already been at 24 years of age. He's been in the
40-year-old virgin.
40-year-old virgin.
Yeah, Donnie Darko.
And then and you're like, you're good for him. And after about 10 minutes, you're like, I want to kill this guy. When I was 24, I was cleaning carpets with Ray. I want to kill him.
How long did that take you to get to that?
Actually, the part where he like writes and produces and acts, you know, and then they keep working his name. So it was his age.
It was his introduction and his age, because it took me exactly our first show to go to my wife. Exactly how fascinating is Corolla?
Yeah, I feel like I think about the nicest thing I can say about me is I'd want to kill me.
Yeah.
If I heard me.
It's occurred to me.
Thank you.
No problem, buddy. I love you.
Oz?
Okay. There is a lot of drug corruption.
Drug consumption.
In the movie.
Right.
Yeah. I am training and learn something with law and responsibility.
Mm-hmm. So there's a moral at the end of the movie.
Yep.
Did you enjoy it?
I enjoy. It's very, very good movie. You know, it's. I remember some friend. You know, living this parable in this movie.
This what?
This life in the movie.
A friend of yours got a girl knocked up and then ended up having the baby. Yep. And it was a happy ending with your friend.
Yep.
Latin guy got someone pregnant.
Oh my God!
Live and learn.
Don't believe me.
Never heard of that before.
They didn't use a prophylactic.
Believe any of your 26 kids would believe that.
I tell to my son, I buy in Costco 300, you know, prophylactic.
For your son?
450 times.
150?
He doubles up.
Ah.
Oz man doubles up.
One for the tongue and one for the...
What's one on the tongue? Come on, buddy. That's good stuff.
Started out a sweet story about you being a good parent. Went down that road.
Responsible dad.
In the end of the day, knockout left the reviewer. Call.
And that was Oswaldo's movie review. We hope you did not end up too confused.
All right, so you didn't enjoy Knockout as much as we thought originally. All right, we need to take ourselves a break. Oz, nice job. Now get to my house and start working, please. Yeah.
Please, please, no pushing.
I was.
Yeah, you pushing. I know.
You push Oz.
Oz gets every once in a while. Oz gets mad.
It's only 4 days for the party.
I'm throwing a party for my kids. The point is that don't go to the house and make proclamations. We'll never get this done. All right. I was driving home on Saturday and rear-ended.
Oh, no.
Yes, I was hit, and I have thoughts about it. So, I'll share that story for you, and then I have some policy changes I'd like enacted involving the roads. I know it sounds insane. You've never heard that from me, but I'll tell you about getting in a car accident Saturday next on the Adam Carolla Show. So, my accident story, and I'll fold this into a larger rant, but I was driving home, of course, stuck in traffic because you're out here in Southern California. That's what you get, even on Saturdays. I was on the 101 heading home in the afternoon. I was stopped. The traffic was stopped. It was gridlocked. And by the way, I found out later the reason the traffic was stopped is because the CHP was giving a ticket to some bikers and people were sort of rubbernecking. There's a couple of guys pulled over, a couple of CHP guys pulled over. I started to realize quite a bit of traffic is caused by the cops pulling people over on the side of the freeway. People slowing down, A, just because there's people standing around the side of the freeway, but B, they're rubbernecking. And if it's a hot blonde or biker or the guy's on a tricked out hog or he's driving a Ferrari, they slow down even more. Perhaps, maybe I'm insane, but perhaps there should be a policy of when you pull these people over, you pull off the goddamn freeway so you don't make a bad situation worse. I have driven down the 101 and been in traffic for 10 miles only to pass a CHP guy handing out, which I'm sure is something tantamount to a chicken ass ticket, and then had it speed up the second we pass him. So you're actually there trying to move traffic along, but in fact, you're slowing it down because everyone is rubbernecking. There's policy number one, you imbeciles. Number two, I'm sitting there in traffic because the cop's handing out a chicken-ass ticket 2 miles ahead of me, and I get hit. Now, I get hit by the guy behind me, but then I get hit. He got hit by the guy behind him and driven into my car. So I got the secondary brunt of the accident. I felt fine. Molly was riding on the passenger seat and went flying into the dash.
Wait, who else? Was it just you and Molly?
Just me and Molly.
It better have been in. You just hear Molly was in the front seat.
That's yeah.
Mrs.
Asked.
Carolla.
Lynette
there.
Was in the trunk where she took the brunt of the... No.
The twins on top of the car.
The twins were duct tape on folding chairs on the hood of the car.
Was Molly okay?
Molly was fine. Molly...
Of course, she has a plunger in her keister now.
I look... Yeah, probably shouldn't have had the plunger. Especially, no, she falls forward. She's fine. She wants to know what's going on. I look in my rear view. It's a guy in a Honda. I see the bumper of his car sort of come detached, but it's just a plastic bumper. He seems to be fine. I don't see any radiator smoke going up. It was a mild accident.
No airbags.
Right. So what I do is I look in the rear view. He seems to be okay. I'm okay. So I do the thing where I put my blinker on and I start moving. I'm in the middle lane. I'm going to move to the right shoulder where we can assess the damage. He does that thing that almost everyone in the city does, which is he's going to get out of his car now and have a long-winded discussion with the idiot that hit him at 4 miles an hour behind him, whose car, by the way, runs fine as well.
Right.
Yes, there's some cosmetic damage. There's some bumper damage. Perhaps there may be a little alignment to be done on the frame or what have you, but the cars are running.
Right.
Put them in gear and move the F over to the shoulder, because I can't tell you how many times I've been behind CSI Caruso and company that were over there just standing around having a chat in the middle of the freeway now because they've deemed this a crime scene. Yes, Brian, did you find out something?
California DMV handbook, the third thing after, see if there's an accident, make sure move your vehicle out of traffic if no one is injured or killed. Third thing.
People have no idea about this rule. They think it's a crime scene. They think if they move the cars over to the shoulder, the insurance is not going to compensate them because all of a sudden the guy's going to go, what do you mean? He hit me.
Right.
So somehow the cops have to show up with a stick that has a wheel on it that's calibrated and some chalk to draw an outline around your Acura. Move your stupid ass over, because as if the freeways weren't slowed up enough, imagine how much it slows up when there's two guys having a chat in the middle lane in the middle of the day in the middle of the 101. And cops... give these guys tickets. I just don't. I have people doing this all the time. And if you pass these people, lean on the horn and scare the crap out of them. I pulled over. I started to pull over on the side of the shoulder and realized these two a-holes were going nowhere. They were going to do what everyone in this godforsaken town does. They were going to have a goddamn powwow on the hood of this guy's car in the middle of the day, in the middle of the 101, in the middle of the lanes. And there was traffic was bad enough. I got off the freeway, pulled into a gas station, stuck my head up under my car, opened the trunk a couple times, saw a little scratch and whatever on the bumper and said, F it, I'm out of here. And I just took off, because I'm not going to stand there with the losers in the middle of the freeway. We need to honk. We need to honk our asses off at these people. And cops, if you can find enough time when you're done handing out the chicken ass tickets and slowing everyone up because we're all rubbernecking because you're on the side of the 101, if you have any ink left in your chicken ass writing pen, how about you write one of these retards a ticket? It's right in the front of the handbook. Brian confirmed it. I didn't even know it. I assumed it said in the handbook, get out of the car and wait for help and do not move the car, because that's what everyone does.
Yeah.
You know, people do the same thing with sirens now. They don't know to pull over to the right. They stop their car.
In the middle of the street.
And the cop says over his loudspeaker, pull your car over to the right.
Yes.
Correctamundo.
It's nice that you guys have created a barricade, so now I can't get the ambulance around you. But pull the F over and the bigger... The thing that sends me through the roof is that on the way out to Malibu and all on the way back on Saturday, I passed 100 lit up signs that said click it or ticket. That's all we do is want to discuss slow down, report drunk driving, click it or ticket. Yet people think a fender bender is a crime scene. Right. People also don't know you can turn right on a red. People don't know to move over when an ambulance. People don't know. And the powers that be, instead of waking them up, just want to get in the click it or ticket.
Adam, this is radio.
I'm disgusted at all of you. We have to take a break. We'll be back in a minute. Well, there There you go. Not bad for a Monday. I want to thank Frank Vincent, The Sopranos. Sunday, 9 o'clock, HBO. Oh, hell, if you ain't watching now, screw you. Right. Christopher Hitchens, God is Not Great. The name of his book, interesting and outspoken. Go to AdamCarolla.com. See Bonaducci's fight. Also, got some good bachelor party footage on AdamCarolla.com as well. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla saying mahalo. I'm S-ing on myself as we speak.